Traveling the Vortex. We've joined the Doctor, and as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 102, I'm Keith.
And I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
Oh, you missed it. He went to get Skittles.
Canine discussion wouldn't be complete without Skittles.
This was my ringtone for a while.
I remember that. Oh... How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm good. I'm in the middle of a four-day weekend.
Oh, that's right. How's your...
I'm halfway... I'm almost done with the four-day weekend.
How was the first of your 2 days off this
week? It
was
good.
Glenn, how's your weekend shopping?
I had to work.
Sarah and I did a lot of Christmas shopping. I am almost all done with my people. We got Sarah's family to shop for left. And
your minions?
My minions.
My people.
My people.
My subjects.
Well, it was important to get our...
Minions!
They prefer that to henchmen.
It's important we get our shopping done, at least for my sister and brother-in-law, early.
Because you have to mail it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
It's only because he went anal retentive again this week. And he has extras, and I'm going to take that one.
But between...
I only did that because I knew it would bother you.
Between Friday and Saturday, we got a lot of it done, and then Saturday night wrapped it all. Almost all of it.
Oh, I didn't even notice there were trees. There were trees. Yeah, there's trees under your tree.
And presents, we still have more to buy.
I can't see the tree through the forest.
There's a lot of presents under the tree. And if you saw my tweet, we added decorations to the Christmas tree. We talked last week how it was kind of bare bones and had like 6 ornaments. Now we got a plethora. Well, not a plethora. We have a...
It's not quite a plethora.
A decent amount.
There's a lot more than there were.
Would you mind explaining to me what a plethora is? Yep. You want to think that you're using words that you do not understand? That's a very nice looking tree. And the angel looks particularly good.
Yes, I made sure to tweet that out individually.
Sean, how was your week?
Change.
Oh, yeah.
Everything changes.
Sean got smacked in the head with life again this week.
Yeah, that kind of sucks. Mel and I decided that financially, it just made more sense to go ahead and break down and move in together. So don't hate me. I'm living in sin, or will be shortly. But...
So was Keith for a long time. No, technically you weren't. You guys weren't technically living together either.
He was living with me.
No.
Insert your own joke
well,
here.
That too, but she was there more than she was at home, technically.
Yeah.
So anyway.
because she never went back home.
Well,
other than to
true.
Do laundry.
We found a townhouse. It's half a duplex. Or else a... What is the correct terminology for that? It's a duplex, which means two, but it's only the one half of it. So is it half a duplex?
You're renting...
It's one unit
You're
in a
renting
duplex.
Half a duplex.
Yeah. It's not... Well, is it half a duplex? Is that what you say?
You're renting half of it.
Because in my mind, I mean, that's what makes sense, but yet half a duplex almost sounds like I'm renting out somebody's basement, and that's not really what's... It's a duplex. So anyway...
You have one unit in a duplex.
Right.
Yes. You're renting a unit in a duplex.
Unit. So yeah, we're gonna do that, and so we're gonna move her out by Saturday. So she's gonna be completely out of her apartment townhouse.
Was that part of them giving her crud? Is that why?
Yeah, she made the announcement to them that they were gonna do it, and they tried to come back and say, well, you can't do that because you have a lease, and she's like, well, no, actually, I don't. They never brought one down for me to sign in July.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, then you're month to month. And because you're month to month, it means it's an increased rate that you have to pay. And we're going to backdate it to July. And Mel said, No, you can't do that
either.
You
can't do that unless they...
If you don't have something with my signature on it, you can't just assume that that's how that works.
Right, right.
So she hasn't heard hide nor hair of them since then. And I said, it's because they're scrambling trying to find paperwork that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. They just never came down to do the lease. So.
Right, right.
But we figure if we set it at the 15th, then she only has to pay rent prorated up through the 15th of the month and then can use that to pay the half rent on the other place. Me, on the other hand, I'm stuck in my lease until July or May. May. But
really?
Yeah. Technically.
So why are you in such a hurry to get out of your
apartment? Well, I'm not, other than the fact that I, you know, the sooner I move out, the sooner they can rent it out, which means I'm not responsible for the rent anymore, legally. I can't afford my place.
I understand that.
Right, so.
But if you're in a lease until July, they're going to collect money from you until July.
No, because if they rent it out to somebody else, I'm off the hook.
Oh, so
he's going to break his lease.
So I'm breaking the lease, yeah.
But then you get fined if you're breaking their lease.
I lose my security deposit.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah.
Oh,
well and I'm responsible for the rent up until they rent it out.
Oh, okay, right. But, well, that's what I'm saying then. Yeah. Okay. Well,
I'm not happy about doing that, but it's like I said.
But you're not stuck there till July, so
no.
You're okay. It's just going to cost you a little more to get out of there.
Right. Which I can't afford now.
But you
anyway,
realize so, they're not going to be in a hurry to find somebody to rent that. Well, they might because you've been there long enough. They probably have gone. The rent's gone up, but they didn't. They've
right,
been
yeah. We were grandfathered
for you, and so they know they can rent it for more to somebody
else.
It's
at least 50 to 100
more.
Well, I mean,
the office is always
paying.
Closed on Saturdays because of high occupancy. I mean, this place is always got you know people move out and then they meet. I mean, you guys missed out on an apartment because
down,
you didn't
yeah,
put
down
down
the building,
payment on.
Yeah, it was like a month, if that.
You know. What, a week later or something? You
yeah, it was like
check
maybe
on
two,
it, so.
Maybe 3 weeks later.
I mean, yeah, I don't think it'll sit too long. But anyway, so that's our news. We've been packing and boxing things up and kind of going crazy about, oh, wow, this is a lot. No, I agree. It's more important to get Mel out.
You're
by
mostly
the,
done,
by her
right?
With Mel's house, yeah, actually, we are. We've only got the kitchen and one of the bathrooms to pack up. And, I mean, the furniture, obviously, the
yeah,
big
right,
stuff.
Right,
but.
Right.
Man, taking down the Christmas village sucked.
I'm sure.
It was like, you just put this up. The tree, I think we're going to try, and we'll probably take like the breakable ornaments off and then stand it up in the back of a truck and drive it over and put it back up and leave it. But the village, I couldn't do it with the village. So
I'd be more willing to do it with the village than the tree.
Oh, no.
Because it's already on a flat surface. Granted, you can't. It's on a door right now, and you can't take the door.
Well, that's part.
So
of
you
it.
Have to take this village down regardless. So
actually, I might try and take the door. They're not going to notice the door being missing. They might. But.
That door wasn't here when we moved in. I don't know what you're talking about.
Add it to the list. But, so yeah, that was my news this week, and then finals are next week. What sucks.
Yeah, you've been studying all weekend though, right?
Sure, yeah. I haven't been packing at all.
Wow.
How about you? What'd you do?
I had to produce the 9 and the 10 on Friday because somebody thought they had to take the day off. So
I got news for you. You got Monday, too.
I didn't produce it. Kevin produced it.
Oh, yeah. Tomorrow you may need help.
Yeah, I was going to say, Lauren will need some help. But so no, it was a normal Friday for me. And then yesterday...
Which did Kevin text you earlier?
Huh.
He texted me on a pronunciation. I don't know why he texted me.
That's funny. No, I didn't. Well, maybe he did and I just didn't get it. Or I didn't look at it, but I've been known to do that. I don't even remember what we did yesterday.
You did your Disney stuff, didn't you?
Well,
I didn't see any pictures.
We didn't post any pictures because we didn't do any like special thing yesterday as an event. What we did is we spent most of the day finishing up some Christmas shopping because
you're going to be gone for a week.
Yeah, that we won't be here, so we got to have it all done. We come back 2 days before Christmas, so we did that. We did some packing over the last 2 days, but we did break mid afternoon and. Went to watched some clips, Disney clips, just because again we didn't have a lot, you know, we didn't have enough weeks to get full movies in. So what we did is I made little compilations of some of the more classic scenes from the lesser, not lesser movies, but the ones that they didn't necessarily have to see the entire movie. Which again, didn't realize that Caitlin has just seen a ton more Disney movies, and I didn't realize it than Mason has, but. So it was a lot more. It's really been more catch up for him. But we watched some clips from like Fantasia because I wasn't going to make the kids watch that whole movie.
Holly doesn't like it. I absolutely love Fantasia.
It's one of my favorite Disney movies. But they needed to see.
It's an acquired taste.
Yeah,
it's,
they needed really to see. To... They needed to see The Sorcerer's Apprentice. So yes. I pulled that yes. out and put it in the compilation. And the big dragon fight scene with
Maleficent.
I say that wrong every time.
Maleficent.
And I did the Wizard's Duel from Sword and Stone, even though there's nothing. But it's one of my favorite clips. The whale scene from Monstro.
See, Sleeping Beauty is one of my favorite.
I love it, too.
Period.
But that was going to be the hardest one to get, I think, Mason to sit down and watch all the way through. So just, you know, some of my favorite clips and things that I thought they needed to know before going into the park. But again, Caitlin had seen almost all of them, except for the Wizard Duel scene from Sword and Stone.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
And then we watched.
I'm kind of surprised she hasn't seen Sword and Stone.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised myself. Then we watched, because I love Sword and Stone, Prep and Landing 2, Naughty versus Nice. So, because it was Christmas and we were doing some Christmassy stuff. And that was it. And then, so today, yesterday, it's been cleaning up the house, making it, you know, presentable for anybody that's going to come, you know, feed cats and whatnot. And then, or cat. We only have one now. And then, packing and you know, finishing Christmas shopping, getting all that done. So that was just
because
kind of running around.
Next Saturday.
We leave next Friday. We're
next
leaving
Friday.
Friday night after I get off work. We're driving to Kansas City. We're going to stay in Kansas City because we're at a hotel that night where we can park for 10 days. So we don't have to pay parking at the airport. They'll shuttle us over to the airport.
Nice.
We'll fly out.
Smart move.
Then we'll shuttle back to the hotel, get our car, and come back when we come back. Yeah. But we fly out Saturday morning to Orlando. So we'll arrive by 12:30 Orlando time.
Nice.
And then it's off to the park.
Off to the park, because that's the first thing we do. We check in, we go right to our first park. Literally, we're doing a half day at Animal Kingdom, so we're jumping right in. Because, you know, which is funny, because the last time we did this, we came back and we said, you know what? We're going to do it longer, for one thing, which the last time we went, we did 4 days. We were there. Well, technically 5 days.
4 days is just not enough time to see
it's
anything.
It's not. And the first day we were there.
It's almost its own zip.
Actually, it was 4 days. Well, no, it was 5 days because we flew out on the fifth day. But, yeah, because we got there and we went right to Magic Kingdom. And so we said, we're going to do a travel day where we can go and rest and be ready to get up. And then we went through a Disney planner, and we decided what happened was, because of the style of package that we bought from Disney through the planner, was so many days, and we're doing a Universal day in there, which Disney doesn't account for.
Oh yeah.
So because we have a
Universal
we have a Universal day in there, we have 2 half-day park hoppers. Mm. So we decided, all right, we'll do Animal Kingdom when we get there. We'll do one park early morning before we
do. But really, Animal Kingdom, you're going to sit most of the time once you get to the park anyways, won't you?
Probably not there. Maybe.
Isn't it mostly a safari ride?
Well, that's one major attraction there, but we're also going to
There'll be a lot of standing and lawn rides, too.
Yeah, there's
it's kind of like a ride.
The one we're totally excited for, in fact, we had to watch a ride.
Do they have locks on those doors?
I typically don't do this because I don't like to spoil surprises for me, especially if it's a ride I've never been on before. But they have where you can download where people have recorded ride-throughs.
Oh.
And there's a ride called Exhibition Everest that's at the Animal Kingdom.
Ooh.
And the story behind it is that you're going to Everest and you're looking for the – or the rumor is that the Yeti is, you know, that's his home. And so you're going on this expedition, and you're on this kind of like mine train, which is a roller coaster. And you go up through, and it's kind of this docile roller coaster that just kind of winds through, and you see some scenery, and then you come up to a track that's just totally mutilated. It's gone. The track is, and you ride right up to it, and there's no more track because the track is just like destroyed. Something has destroyed it. And suddenly you start going backwards, and then you go into the mountain, and when you get to a certain point, you look up, you see the Yeti, you see the shadow of the Yeti, and he's tearing up the track. And it's like, oh, my God. And then you go through, and then you see a giant animatronic, and then it's done. It's all over with. There's a giant animatronic Yeti. It sounds incredible. My daughter's not sure she wants to ride this thing. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to download a ride through so you can see it, see how, you know, whether it's too much for you, too intense for you or not. So she watched that tonight. She then thought it might have been too intense for her. So I don't know if she's going to end up writing it, but I'm still writing it.
Anyway, it looks fantastic. So are they going to wait while you ride any rides they don't want to?
That's just it. They do Kid Swap at Disney World, which is fantastic. So we can all wait in line together.
Wait, what?
They do Kid Swap. We can all wait in line together. Holly and me, Caitlin and Mason. We go all the way up to the front of the line. We say we're riding Kid Swap. So they move us aside. They put me on the ride. They put me on the ride. And I ride through, and then when I'm done, I get off, and I go stand with the kids, and Holly gets on the next ride available and goes around and comes back, and then we get off. Disney's very, very family-friendly, and this is one of the perks for these parks, is the fact that they will go above and beyond to make sure that everybody in your party can do what they want to do. And so we're likely going to have to do that if we don't end up, because one of us is going to have to stay off with Mason anyway, so because he won't ride it. But in fact, he's too small to ride that one. But they've got their own version of it's a little more wild and longer. But they've got their versions of Fury of the Nile there.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess that would make sense.
I would say half of the park is a zoo and half the park is rides. They've got a dinosaur ride. You know the dinosaur movie. There's a ride through where you actually it's kind of a jostling dark ride. You're in this like car and you've gone back in time and you get a look at the dinosaurs that come, these giant animatronic dinosaurs come down around you as you drive through the path. So,
wow.
Yeah, it sounds pretty intense. Holly rode that last time. I didn't do that one, but I did Tough to Be a Bug, which she didn't do, so we're both going to try and do that one this time. So that kind of stuff. That was just it. We didn't get to Everest last time, and we didn't get to the Kilimanjaro, or not the Kilimanjaro, that's the Safari, which is actually the ride-through zoo. And we didn't
which is
do
the only
the,
thing I've ever seen advertised for Animal Kingdom.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of their big draw, is the fact that you ride through and actually see, it's perceived that you're actually on the safari, and these animals could walk up to you at any time. And most of them do, but there are lions and things like that are actually cleverly sectioned off that you can't tell that they are. But
the vegetarians
the vegetarians come up to them. In fact, you have to stop sometimes because they're crossing the road, and sometimes they're standing in the road. So
Veggisaurus Lex.
But we did that ride last time we went. So
you're not going to do that one again?
We'll do that. Yeah, we'll do that. We're there for 7 days, Keith. We're going to do it all.
I've never been. I don't know how much there is.
We'll be at the parks a couple of times. No,
There's a lot. 7 days, honestly, is even pushing it, in my mind. There's that
no,
much.
No, yeah, there
there's
really
that,
is.
That much to do, especially if you're going to include Universal, now that Universal has two parks.
We're not doing both parks, though. We're only doing Islands of Adventure. And really, the only reason we're going to Islands of Adventure, because there's a lot of stuff that Mason can't do there, and they don't do Jones Lop.
That's true.
But really, the only reason we're going there is for the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. That's totally that. Because
that's
Holly
the only reason I want to go to
Holly is a Harry Potter freak. She loves Harry Potter.
She's a Potterhead.
She's a Potterhead. There you go. That's what it is. I don't know what it's called.
You're going to go hang at Marvel Superhero Island.
Yeah,
don't lie to me.
Well, Mason and I are going over there. I like Harry Potter. Don't get me wrong. I'm kind of a mild Potterhead, but she's huge. She absolutely loves Harry Potter. So that's what we're going for her. So the rest of the park she could care less about.
Well, two items of note on your trip. Since you mentioned the Christmas shopping, I happen to have my Christmas list here. So you can, it's all stuff alphabetized, starting with Goofy and working my way down the list of things that I'd like to have from Disney World.
Why does it start on G?
Because Goofy's the best.
Goofy starting with G.
Yeah, but if it's alphabetical, you didn't have anything from A through
Donald? F? Yeah. I mean.
You got an email?
Oh.
No, not really.
Donald's awesome.
Yeah, but I've got a bunch of stuff for Donald. And on the back is Universal. So,
oh, okay.
There's that.
All right. I'll put that here in my briefcase. Oh, sorry. Did I crumple that up? I didn't mean to.
A brief note to the listeners and to you. We may need to record Monday night with the move happening next weekend. Oh. I don't know for sure yet. It's a possibility.
It's not going to work for me either.
We're going to wait for you.
Oh, good. I have an extra day to read
that's
the book.
The other thing
started.
Well, see, with finals this week and moving this week, I haven't cracked the book yet. And I'm looking at it going, I got a week. Man, it'd be kind of nice to have Monday.
Make sure he gets his homework done.
I will.
Because I know you will. But
I'll get it done.
I won't watch anything. I won't play anything.
Yeah, exactly.
After I get up, after Sarah goes to bed, I'm going to read.
My stuff's all packed.
They're still. Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So
even the Xbox is packed away.
Even the Xbox is packed away at this point.
He has no option but read.
You got it. But right now I'm reading French. So
when is your friend's final?
Thursday. I'm completely done with school Thursday, but then the movie
starts.
So
he's going to crack the book open Friday. That's why he's going
to
do it
fair,
Monday.
To be fair, I read that one
entire weekend.
Ninth Doctor book in a day.
Yeah, but so you were doing the morning show.
Yeah, it's true. I'm just saying, it's possible.
I read Story of Martha over a weekend, and I would have had it done in a day if it had been any good.
Well, you didn't finish it.
No, I did.
We got some
that weekend.
We got some off mic discussions to do here because we're gonna run into a problem that week before Christmas. That weekend before Christmas.
We are?
Yeah, because I've got family stuff up until really late on Sunday, and you're doing a morning show on Monday morning.
Ooh.
So we should record Monday that week?
Christmas Eve?
Yeah.
That won't work for me either, because I got to get up butt early in the next morning on Christmas Day and drive to Wichita, so...
That show
might not get out until Wednesday or Thursday.
Maybe we do it early. When do you get back?
We do it Christmas night, maybe.
When do we watch Doctor Who?
Well, we could. Maybe we could watch Doctor Who.
We just watch Doctor Who and then talk about it immediately.
I'm fine with that if you're done with your stuff.
It'll be my second viewing.
You don't get off till 10:30, though.
You're off.
You're working Christmas.
Yeah, that's right. So I'll be... Maybe Wednesday would be best.
We'll talk about it off mic.
Okay. Wait, did we do that during the show? Oh, no. All right, everybody get everything that they did this weekend out of the way. No, Sean, you haven't talked about what you did. Oh, yeah, I went last, didn't I? And I went way into Tangerine on Disney World, which I'm going to talk about in 2 weeks, so I probably talked way too much more than I should have now.
Yes.
Am I rambling again?
Yeah.
News!
But we expect you to come back and regale us with all these stories in a side trip about how fantastic it was. I want live reports.
I'm not even going to talk about it that week.
I want you to call. Okay. I want pictures on Instagram. I want tweets. I want radio, television, newspaper, movie coverage.
The problem with me doing podcasting while I'm gone is you always have to be careful, especially on things like Facebook and stuff where a lot of your stuff is public and a lot of people know you and some people potentially know where you live. When you start doing that stuff on Facebook, people realize you're out of town for a long amount of time, and there might be some nefarious characters that can see my Facebook because I'm friends with friends, and they might choose that week to break into my house.
I'll return the truck after I'm done moving.
Change your settings.
Yeah, I might do that. I might just go private the whole week, and then only you guys can see it.
Yeah, exactly.
Only your Vortex friends are going to know.
None of them live here.
Yeah.
None of my Vortex
friends. So none of them are going to break into your apartment?
None of them live.
Or your house?
None of my Vortex friends live in Topeka.
None.
None of them.
None of them.
None.
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 Zero.
Zip.
If this was an episode of Sesame Street, the count would say zero. Because that would be as far as he could get. He couldn't even get to one.
That's the...
light. That's a true story, because we had Katrina this weekend. And so desperate to find something for her to not... pull out of a box or put into a box, because she's really big into boxes, you know, putting things in and taking things out of boxes. Yeah, well, now especially she's like, so we booted up Netflix because Mel hadn't packed up her Xbox yet and went looking and found Sesame Street. It's like, oh, cool. And we watched a couple episodes of New Sesame Street, which quite frankly sucks. And so I went back and I found Classic Sesame Street.
It's not for you.
Yeah, you're right. I went back and found Classic Sesame Street and booted it up, and there was an episode of Sesame Street where the number of the day was zero, and I had to stop and think to myself, I don't think I've ever seen that.
Yeah, I'll be darned.
Ever. Because the count's always about,
I'm glad to know that Classic Sesame Street's on there.
Classic Sesame Street's on there.
That's awesome.
Now, it's still the weird open. You remember, I think maybe we even talked about this once, where it's like Big Bird riding a horse, and they're out on this farm, and the kids are running around.
Yeah.
And it's like,
that was kind of,
you're in New York! There is no farm!
That was kind of post us, too, because that wasn't even how it opened when we were kids.
Yeah,
so, I don't remember that open.
No. Well.
That was post Netflix our generation.
Then again, I don't remember much of Sesame Street. So, I watched it. I don't remember it.
I'm trying to figure out how many of these skits.
This is how sad. Friday night, we were on YouTube. No, on Friday night. It must have been last night. Yeah. I was on YouTube. Oh, no, it was one night after I got home from work. Anyway, I was on YouTube, and I stumbled across a Sesame Street, classic Sesame Street clip on YouTube. And, of course, anytime you're watching anything on YouTube, and we have Apple TV, so we can watch it on the TV. Anytime you stumble across something on YouTube and it gives you suggestions for more...
You watched 12 of them before you...
No, we did more than that. We watched classic Sesame Street clips for nearly 2 hours that night.
Because Netflix.
Well, because then we got to the point where we were like, don't know that one, don't know that. Because sometimes it filters in some of the... So then Holly's going, well, how about the Alligator King? Oh, here it is, Alligator King. How about the typewriter guy? Typewriter guy. Oh, yeah, here he is. How about that really creepy milk song? Really creepy milk song. Sure enough, it found it. You guys remember that one? Where it was like the process of milk, and it goes from the cow. It's like there's a baby in a crib, and she's crying.
Oh, and there's that
milk.
Yes, I remember that one. Oh, God, I hated that.
That's it. It was so creepy. I loved it. I loved it as a kid for some reason. Well, it was creepy.
It's because you like milk.
But, but anyway, it's the process. It goes from the cow, and they milk the cow, and it goes in the thing, and he takes it to the thing, and he pours it in the hole, and it goes in the thing, and it pumps in the trunk.
Eventually,
and
the baby drinks. Sounds
like a song.
And it goes to the, yeah. There's no lyrics to this except for milk. And there's this eerie music that plays, this bed that plays underneath, and it gets a little more rapid at one point because the baby, you know, she's crying. She just keeps crying.
It's more and more. It's supposed to be like that Production Factory cartoon music. It's not.
Exactly. No, it's not.
It's horrible.
Because at the beginning, when they're in, it's just. It's just like nice, docile music. Still creepy, but
it's like an episode of the X-Files music.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, that's exactly. It's kind of reminiscent of the X-Files.
It's like Mike Myers
song.
Is going to
yeah.
come kill
yeah.
you.
Yeah, something like that. or this baby's
John Carpenter
set up in her head's constructed.
John Carpenter directed Sesame Street. A Nightmare on Sesame Street. I want to know how many of these skits were reused. Because we watched two episodes of Classic Sesame Street today, and I saw Grover counting people on the elevator, which I remember.
Yeah.
I saw the guy ordering the alphabet soup where Grover was
Grover's
waiter.
Oh, Grover's the waiter, yeah.
And
yeah.
Soup got
we watched
cold.
One of those the other night, too. There were a lot of those.
Grover
was a waiter.
I saw the count. I saw, a lot of the little animated segments mm-hmm. with, and I'm just watching these.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
We didn't get a pinball machine. Oh. I was actually upset that we didn't get a pinball machine, but we got that weird where it would start to count and then they'd get to whatever the letter was or the number was, and it would flash toward the screen. And it's like, I'm having an epileptic seizure watching this thing fly at the screen.
And then they would do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It'd be a clip, and they would count. All of the things in it, they like freeze and then like
three chickens. One, two, three.
Yeah, that was three, and then it would just stop at three, and then three hot fudge.
And the guy
Sundays,
would birthday cakes, and he'd fall down.
Or birthday cakes, or whatever the number happened to be. It was always a different thing.
So I'm watching these, and all these memories are flooding back. It's like I remember this
it's
one.
Eight
I remember
coconut
this one.
Cream pies, by the way.
Eight
we watched
cream
that
pies.
One.
and then I looked at Mel. I was like, okay, I can't possibly have seen these two particular episodes of Sesame Street.
No, they
had to have recycled.
They
these
would
clips.
Well,
a lot.
Here's the thing: is they only ever did really like numbers 1 through 12. So
on most of them,
there's
yeah.
like two, you know, you at least saw those probably two or three times a week, exactly,
yeah.
because you just continue to see the same numbers over and over again. 26 letters. Well, there's back in the day, there was more than 26 episodes in a season. So yeah, they reused those a lot of times. What about the Ladybug Picnic? Did that one come
I remember on? Ladybug Picnic.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
I'm trying to think of the one that really just floored me that it happened to be that, and I was like, oh wow, and it really brought me back. Now I don't for the life of me now I can't remember which one it was. But it was the guy, and he came out. They had the pig singing about mud, the little animated one where he's like, I love
mud.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, that one was like, oh I remember this.
Yes.
And then, Cookie Monster on the Train. They're singing, and he's the engineer, and the train
yeah,
of
yeah,
cookies
yeah, yeah.
and ice cream
yes,
and all
yes,
this stuff,
yes,
and he's
yes,
got to get
yes.
to town.
Okay.
And there's an avalanche. So then he's sitting there, he's like, boy, I go, what am I going to do? We got to get the cookies. Cookies. Me up here on the mountain all alone.
Because it walks the tracks, right?
Right.
Yes,
and so,
okay, I do remember that.
So
one.
Then, you know, he talks himself out of it, and the guy comes up and starts singing the song again. So he says, you know, me forget about the cookies. I'd eat the snow instead. And just dives in and starts eating the apple.
my favorite.
Stuff.
I think I've talked about this before, but my all-time favorite Sesame Street clip ever of all time, and I absolutely love it, is the one where you've got the three guys. Actually, the first guy, he looks like Menominee, and he'll come in and he'll say ball, and then he'll go away. And
yes.
then the next guy comes in and goes small. And the next guy comes in and goes tall. And the next guy comes in and goes fall.
And
then the
Menominee
guy comes back and goes, well, the ball doll has set on the fall. It's just hilarious. It's just, and he makes you do this like four stanzas of different thing, rhyming words, and he comes back and does the same thing every time. Hilarious. Absolutely love it. In fact, if anybody wants to give me that for Christmas on CD, that'd be awesome.
On CD, okay. Sean's writing it down now. Ooh, easy present.
I'm sorry, I'll your present's already under the tree. It.
I know. Boom. And I got a text from your wife saying, I'm doing Christmas shopping. What do you want? Or actually, it was,
you got
what
that
do you
too?
Want
you
slash a need? What Doctor Who DVDs do you want slash need?
You know what?
And I texted back, you want me to tell you what to get me for Christmas? And she texted back, yes, I do, because I'm shopping now, and don't be difficult or you're going to get coal.
Usually it's...
So I listed off all the things that I wanted or didn't have.
I guess I had.
And then she came back and said, "Thank you for not being difficult." And I said, "Thank you for not giving me coal for Christmas."
I guess I had it a little bit easier than you because I got the same question, and it was a question of which ones do I need that Glenn doesn't own that I don't own, versus you, which would have been, "Wow, which ones do I need that Sean doesn't own?" And that would have been a lot tougher.
Yes.
Yep.
Are you ready done? To do
news? Wow, I'm ready to do news.
I'm waiting on you Come guys. On. 34 minutes in, and we're getting done news. Bad.
Get to news, Keith. Come on.
It's pretty good for us.
So what did you guys do this week?
First 6 hours of Sesame Street. It was awesome. I love Netflix.
I'm going to go fire that up now. I didn't realize the classics were
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Our first I don't think you can news. Find them through the regular, though. I think you have to go into the Netflix for kids.
Oh,
I found it real easy through there.
Okay, but I'll do that.
I'm sorry, Keith. Go ahead.
Doctor Who was on the TV Guide Matt cover.
Matt cover?
Matt's on the TV Guide cover.
That works better.
For Doctor Who?
That's where you're just going to...
Doctor Who's on the TV Guide cover.
We're not going to get a fanfare or a...
Bum, 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 bum. We won the fan
like
favorite
the of the
cover.
Bum, 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 bum.
That's totally our opening theme music.
We should do a podcast on old TV show themes. We just were full of them. Or it. I don't know which one.
Let's do a side track.
Has the theme song "The Spider-Man" ever bothered you?
Spider-Man. Does whatever a spider can.
It's not very...
He can't do everything a spider
nobody
can,
Nobody can't. He can't enter your ear. He can't have sex with a spider.
What was that on? That was on
something
this
week's Big Bang.
Big Bang, that's what it was. Yeah, I was going to say, I remember that.
That was the open to this week's Big Bang.
I thought Keith was being witty. No. Turns out he was pirating other people's funny.
Taking funny ideas.
Let's talk about the TV Guide.
This week's was funny, though.
It was.
So, Doctor Who's on the cover of TV Guide.
Yay! Fan favorites cover, first time ever in TV Guide history. The Doctor Who has graced the cover.
By the way, congratulations, Whovians. I want to think that we were
instrumental.
We were instrumental in
getting it on the cover.
Don't forget to vote for People's Choice.
Apparently, there was a little bit of a race, actually, because when they first announced it, Doctor Who sprang out to this huge lead, and then apparently we all got complacent, and one other show, I think it might have been Walking Dead, kind of started to...
That would have been the only other one that could
walk
close.
Up closely to it.
Yeah, it kind of like zombified.
Unfortunately, it was just ambling up.
Yeah, it staggered.
Fortunately, Rory turned around and shot it in the head,
and then apparently there was a last minute flurry of activity, and who wound up on top. And it's a decent article. Keith and I both read it. Glenn has not.
It's a 3-page article.
It's not as good as the Entertainment Weekly spread.
It's half the length.
I didn't read it from start to finish, but I thumbed through it at Walmart today, so I kind of glanced through it.
I think I have issues with this, quite honestly. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm thrilled. Doctor Who's on the cover of TV Guide.
Yay. First time ever.
But for
second
a show,
American publication.
For a show that's 49 years old, the fact that it's the first time that it's on TV Guide's cover, and the fact that the only reason it's on a TV Guide cover is because it's the fan favorite win. And they make a very big point of pointing that out on the cover. There's a big banner that says, Fan Favorites Cover Contest
Winner.
Maybe
they'll pay a little closer attention to it.
That's what I'd like to think.
Well, I'd like to think so, but it just in a way, it almost feels like a backhanded compliment, because it's not, hey, we're going to celebrate Doctor Who because it's about time.
It's not the EW cover.
We're going to celebrate Doctor Who because you guys are twisting our arm and forcing us to do it, and everybody voted for this stupid show. That's kind of what it feels
and
like.
And we're trying to catch up and compete with other magazines.
Yeah, it really does. It feels like that. And then, as Glenn pointed out, this is the kicker for me, is there's a little aside up here on the corner that says, flip for tribute cover, remembering Larry Hagman. And you literally flip the magazine over, and it's the TV Guide memorial to Larry Hagman, who died, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, right.
It was 2 weeks
ago. And we want to talk about being bummed. That was the week I missed Friday Night Who, and I went ahead and tweeted along anyway.
It was the story of Martha.
And
it
was not the story, Martha.
God, I'm Smith glad and Jones. I wasn't there then.
But it was the Smith and Jones, and I tweeted
along
anyway.
Did you know they televised that story?
And nobody watched.
It's a bonus.
I thought you would just sit down and reading along, and then you tweet out where you were.
Now turn the page.
That's absolute BS.
Oh, but did you see Phil's tweet to us about that?
I did. Phil sent about us the whole link of audio.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was all Disney versions.
Yeah.
There wasn't anything else, but yeah.
But, yeah, so the Larry Hagman thing's on the back, and I was really bummed when Larry Hagman died, because, of course, like everybody, I watched Dallas when it was on.
I forgot, because of Dallas fame, that he was I Dream a Genie.
Yeah, yeah. Adrian Nelson. That's where I watched
That's
him
where
the
I
most.
Was like, oh.
I caught him in reruns on that. Yeah, I caught him on Dallas.
I mean, I watched I've probably seen the entire run of I Dream a Genie probably 4 or 5 times, as many times as I've watched it in reruns. Seriously.
Seems
I'm not
right.
kidding you.
Shall we do the theme song?
I'll just do the short version. Can you do the Dallas theme song?
You doubted me. I saw the look in your eye. You were like, I'm going to catch him on that one.
I was going to see if you could do it. You did it. But I was doing it too, so.
And Keith's sitting over here.
I recognize Dallas. I know the cliffhanger. That's all I know.
That's why I beat you on Sompok on US TV shows almost every time. There's a couple of times where you'll catch me on some.
And then there's some that are current, like Jersey Shore. I'm like, hell is a song.
You must guess better because you got that right one time against me.
Because I've got it wrong before.
Enough
and I was like,
you
oh,
recognized
yeah.
it.
That's that song.
I got that and went, oh, I'm doing good. I'm doing good.
What the heck is this?
And I think you beat me. I was like, dang it.
That's why we have to do a podcast on classic TV show
yes,
songs.
Absolutely.
We couldn't do this. But yeah, it just feels a little weird that Larry Hagman is bumped to the back. And if we're going to do Doctor Who as the fan contest winner for TV Guide, couldn't we have held off a week,
yeah,
give Larry Hagman his
go,
due,
let's
and
go
then
fully.
They should have.
We would have been understanding.
As yeah. we talked pre-show, it was going to be Larry Hagman was going to be bumped for the fan favorite regardless. So why not just push it back a week?
The fan favorite was going to be bumped.
Which should have been
should
have been pushed back.
I guess
yeah. regardless,
Larry Hagman was going to be flipped on the back. Was relegated to the back, no matter who the fan winner
yes,
was.
Whoever
yes,
the winner yes, was. So it's yes. not like it's a Doctor Who thing. But
yeah,
they,
no.
They should
have bumped whatever the fan favorite winner was.
Yes,
I would be offended even if I wasn't a Whovian at this. So
I'd be more offended if I wasn't a Whovian.
There's probably some people that especially were offended by it because they weren't Whovians.
I'm, you know, don't get me wrong. It's we're celebrating success. Doctor Who's on the cover of TV Guide. Yay! But
and it's got a.
And you know what next week is going to be?
I hear it's The Hobbit.
It might be The Hobbit. I don't know.
It's also got an interview with John
before
Barrowman
the,
in the magazine.
Podcast, it was The Expletive Hobbit. It
might be The Expletive
came
Hobbit.
From you.
For those that don't know, John Barrowman is on Arrow, and they have an interview with him about
So Barrowman is also
is
in
it,
the TV
Is
guide.
That Serendipity?
Yes. That he's on
that
Arrow?
That's in the
No, that
magazine?
He's ended up in the same magazine
no, I
as
think
Doctor
that was,
Who.
I, think,
the
I think
bet there
was
a big upcoming episode that...
Because we got to meet
of.
The new companion, so they at least had that in the can, too. If it won, they knew that it would.
I was kind of surprised by that. Then again, I shouldn't be. The fact that on the cover, exclusive, meet the new companion, and it's like a paragraph.
Yeah,
it's
a
exclusive.
Byline.
It is exclusive to U.S. publications.
Yes.
It is. It's true. Because I don't think they even mentioned it in the Entertainment Weekly, did they?
Well, that was before they
announced her, so
yeah.
That's probably why then.
So we can make up something and call it exclusive to Traveling the Vortex as U.S. podcasts.
Yeah, there you go.
Let's make
that's
up something.
True.
This does have the reference to the Cybermen Neil Gaiman story in it too. So
that's what I'm saying. They had this article written.
They had interviews done.
Yeah, they were
You're
just
fishing
gonna...
for news now, Keith. We've talked
what
about
is next?
Gaiman.
Because
we've talked about Cybermen. Put
I'm
it
tired
down.
Of talking about the Doctor, but yay, yay,
yay
Doctor
Who!
Yay, it's
congratulations,
on
guys! Congratulations.
And if you haven't picked up your copy,
congratulations to us, not just us, but us as Whovians,
us as fans.
If you have not picked up your copy yet, it's available.
Yeah.
I mean, if you rushed out and bought the Entertainment Weekly, you don't need this, quite honestly.
I definitely don't think it's worth $4.99.
Yeah. If you're framing them and putting them on.
Now, yeah, if you're a completist, if you're a collector, then absolutely. It's totally worth it.
Proudly put this on my bookshelf.
I'm getting the digital copy, so.
Now if only Doctor Who was on my TV. Not on my TV guide, on my TV. And he isn't.
Come back.
How many days are we, Glenn?
15?
15 days.
To Christmas?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, better get your shopping done.
No lie. Oh, wait, that would require money.
Actually, we're still 16. Hasn't moved over to the 10th yet.
Not yet. 5 minutes.
You don't count Christmas Day, but okay.
You do. Next up, if you're counting, if we're counting until Christmas, I agree with you. If we're counting until the Doctor Who holiday special, which doesn't air until late Christmas
Day. That's true.
Day,
that would be Christmas night. You
got to do that one.
Maybe 16.
All right.
BBC, in their further publicity of the Christmas special, have unleashed a sneak peek at a brand new TARDIS console.
I haven't seen that yet either.
We only get to see the top.
This is the unveiling for me now. Here we go.
Section of the console.
It's all Gallifreyan.
Yeah.
I think he must have died while carving it.
Do you suppose this is a console for the 50th? Do we suppose this is a console for the Christmas special?
No. The BBC's Doctor Who has revealed a sneak peek at a brand new TARDIS that will debut in this year's Christmas special, The Snowman.
Okay, so now,
the second TARDIS for Matt Smith will be the first TARDIS for new companion Clara.
My question for you then is, we're going to get a complete redesign then besides just the Gallifreyan symbols on a spindle there? What do you guys think about this? Because this is like news to me. I actually like the console we have now. I
think there's going to be too much change for me.
Is it a total redesign, or are we going to incorporate the old console?
Is he
redecorating because it'll remind him too much of Amy and Rory?
I think that's
that.
It.
I think could be
looking at the picture.
Show them the blow up for Pete's sake. There's a girder
in the very far corner that looks like part of current console.
No. Do you want what the girder looks like? It looks like one of the girders in the movie version.
It does.
No, the movie.
Bring down. Yeah, that totally. Well,
it's not wood.
Yes, those girders do. No, those weren't wood. They were like, they looked like steel girders.
Rector set girders. But it's curved like the Coral console. So it's kind of a meld between the two.
Because the girder ones kind of did the little inset. But it actually looked like old girder type.
Yeah.
I think, if I remember right.
Isn't there some of that in this current console, though, too?
I don't know. Is there?
I think there is.
Can't think right off the top of my head of any, but
I'm torn because I do like the console room that we've gotten now.
And 2.5 years seems like such a short amount of time
really
to have a console.
To rechange it again. But then again, we went through, how long did Baker have the
but that was the backup.
The auxiliary control room. What was it, just
one season? Yeah.
And then this one's been closed for redecorating even though it hadn't changed at all.
Maybe this is a backup console room.
Oh, I'd be okay with that.
Maybe they'll go there. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm not against it. I love the art, the design of it. Looks really cool. For what limited, I mean, we're talking about the ceiling. We have no idea what this thing's going to look like. I love the look. If the rest of it pans out to be, and I'm a little hopeful, a little fanboy squeeing, that because it's a very monochromatic look to it, that it's all silver.
That maybe kind of goes back
we'll kind of revert back to that kind of
white spindles on the wall.
Yeah.
Or whatever they were.
Roundels.
I don't want to say sterile, but it looks more tech. It looks more sci-fi. Rose complains about tech, alien tech. Mm-hmm. The old TARDIS console would have been alien tech for her.
Sure,
she'd have loved it.
Yes.
The new TARDIS console, it's a little more organic feel
to it.
So.
Well, I think Matt Smith is less organic feel, but
well, I don't know. His console itself, though, has got those weird kind of egg carton panels on it, and
the coral look too, but they look different. But
I don't know. I'm excited to see more.
I'm reserving judgment because anytime I say anything bad about the Christmas special, people just jump all over me. So I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to reserve judgment.
I'm just worried there's going to be.
It's not just
change.
The Christmas special that they jump on you for.
and a certain cyborg Western.
You know what would make the Christmas special awesome? If the snowman turned out to be robotic snowmen from the Old West. Like, underneath the snow, they're actually cactuses.
Oh, okay.
Something else that goes along with the Christmas special.
They've announced a huge name guest star. Sir Ian McKellen is lending his voice to the snowman. The snowman will be voiced by Gandalf.
Or Magneto.
Magneto.
Or either.
I mean, I go Gandalf before I go Magneto, but...
Chrissy posted this on Facebook, and Sarah was like, what, Gandalf's going to be in the Doctor Who special? What? And I'm instantly, what? What's... I went verified, because I was like, no way. And
it's his voice.
It's his voice. Yeah.
It's his voice.
We're doing a crossover with Lord of the Rings in preparation for The Hobbit.
Not to mention
Gandalf's going to be on Doctor Who.
We've had Dumbledore in an episode. Now we're getting Gandalf voicing an episode.
But Michael Gambon is not as big of an actor here.
We had Davy Jones in an uncredited.
But nobody knows who Davy Jones is.
Yes, they do. Everybody knows who Bill Nighy is. He was Davy Jones in the... No.
You're talking Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
I was...
Everybody knows who Bill Nighy is.
I'll dispute that. Nobody knows who Bill Nighy is.
We were talking on Wednesday with
Bill Nighy.
Yes, geeks know. Because our director Adam and our intern Katie
had
no idea who Bill Nighy was.
Anyway, he's a big name and he was uncredited. I mean... I don't want to make it sound like I'm disappointed with Ian McKellen as casting. I think it's fantastic. I think people are making a bigger deal out of it than it really is. It's his voice, for crying out loud, guys. Yeah. I mean, come on. Big name actors, Patrick Stewart is a voice actor all over American television now. I mean, come on. You don't squee every time you hear him in American Dad, or you hear him on
he's an American
Family
Dad?
Guy, or you hear
yeah,
him
that makes
yeah,
it worth
been
watching.
On Family Guy, too.
he's in Family Guy?
Yeah, he's actually
all of
Family Guy.
I've seen that one.
I don't know. I still get kind of excited.
I don't know. I'm
excited. Glenn.
Yay.
Ian McKellen.
If he was actually lending his acting prowess, his entire body.
They totally did stop motion animation for the snowman off of him. I've seen the preview pictures. He's in a little suit ping pong balls stuck to his beard.
Sean, who is a huge advocate and lobbies for Andy Serkis being nominated for an Oscar because of his portrayal of Gollum.
Yes.
Now
no, not
you're
Gollum
going
for
to
Caesar.
Be. Now you're well. No, but
I
now
he deserved
you're
going, it for Gollum too. Gollum, but see, he Gollum. Had a real chance.
But
for
now you're thinking that the snowman should get an acting Emmy because they CG'd Ian McKellen's movements and voice. So
no, they'll get a BAFTA.
Yeah,
oh BAFTA. Yeah, you can get an Emmy.
It does air in BBC America.
Yeah, he could get an Emmy.
Sherlock was nominated,
but he
might get
Emmys.
A Cymru.
BAFTA Cymru.
BAFTA Cymru. Yes.
Ian McKellen.
It's still cool.
Nah,
don't let Glenn bah humbug you.
Yeah. Bah humbug, Glenn. Bah humbug.
It's neat. It's neat. I just can't get all excited about it.
I just can't wait for the snowman to stand up and go, "You shall not pass."
Or put on a helmet. Magneto, my helmet.
Yeah, I got it.
He doesn't have any recognizable lines.
So now wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait, we're missing the point here. That means the snowman will talk.
Well, yeah, that's a big point.
Yeah,
we're not talking
They're not
about
just.
So you are even closer with the snowman, or where you're whatever your Sean Connery.
The snowman.
That's it.
The snowman. I'm the snowman. I can't do Gandalf though.
How about a Magneto?
No, I don't do that one.
Our last bit of news.
No, but I mean that means we're not dealing with mindless creatures that are just all teeth, and we're talking about something that can at least articulate at some point in time in the episode. Mm-hmm. I think that's an important plot of it. And when it articulates, it's going to sound like Ian McKellen.
That's bigger news than the fact that they hired Ian McKellen to come into a sound booth for
2 hours and voice seven lines.
Bah humbug.
Crispin Glover provided the voice of what's his face in Beowulf, and he didn't really have that much dialogue. It was mostly blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but Crispin Glover's creepy, so.
Are you saying Crispin Glover is on the same level as Ian McKellen?
I'm just saying when they're not when they're lending their voice, it could be. Who knows how articulate they actually are?
He's supporting my argument. I'm supporting your argument. Realize.
No,
you see,
it's awesome. But I'm supporting your argument.
But there's no reason for them to go out and get Ian McKellen, sir. Ian McKellen. If all it was going to be, you've got Nicholas Briggs on standby. He's on speed dial. You call the guy up and say, "Dude, we need you to come in and growl into the microphone."
That's
and
a very valid point too.
You've got Mark Gatiss who would do it for free. You don't even have to pay him. I mean, come on.
Or even Moffat probably would.
Yeah.
Our last bit of news is former showrunner Russell T. Davies and his partner Andrew tied the knot the past weekend. Yay!
Not this weekend, but the past weekend.
Yes.
Congratulations
to both of them.
Where were they married?
Doesn't say.
In a private ceremony.
Private ceremony, okay.
Yes.
That's the correct answer for anything he asks you, Keith.
private
ceremony. If you don't know the answer from now on, in a private ceremony.
So apparently, Andrew's
where did Sean and Mel have lunch,
better.
Keith?
In a private ceremony. True in a private story. Restaurant.
What'd you apparently do this weekend? In a private ceremony.
Apparently, Andrew's recovered. Because I remember we had the news, I don't remember how long ago, part of why he stepped away from Torchwood Miracle Day was because Andrew wasn't in the best of health.
Oh, so he's doing better now.
I would assume if they got married, or he turned made a turn for the worse. So well, they got married.
A little black rain cloud tonight.
Me?
Yeah.
First, you're poo-pooing
about Ian McKellen, and now you're all like, "Wow, I hope the guy's not dead." I mean, man.
Well, he's not dead.
He's not dead. He got married.
Although he did get married, so it's pretty close.
And they didn't say where.
That was your line.
Yeah. Somebody recognize my genius and get me off this show.
Not gonna happen.
How about feedback?
Feedback. We've got some feedback, and Ian McKellen's gonna be the voice of the snowman. Yeah, jazz hands.
Our first bit of feedback comes from Dr. Phil. As we mentioned last week, he sent us some additional audio, this time about the invisible enemy, and it's audio, so we'll take a listen.
Dr. Phil reporting in after the wonderful 100th anniversary of Traveling the Vortex. Thanks for including all of the stuff I sent you guys. To respond a little bit, sure, we'd probably love to find a way to come down there and perform, and I'm sure that if there's just a way to cover some gas and travel and a few couches to crash on, and that's not a problem. Nonetheless, we're trying to get some materials together on the web so people can see at least bits of the performance from Chicago TARDIS. So that'll be coming soon to an interweb near you. Just a few comments on the invisible enemy, which you guys are focusing on very shortly, is... that was a very, very one of my favorite stories I was looking forward to when I first watched Tom Baker, because my first doctor on television was Colin Baker, but as soon as I became aware of the show, I was like collecting a lot of the comics, which are mostly Tom Baker-focused reprints of the Doctor Who Monthly comic series, and got the program books right away and were reading plot synopses, waiting for PBS to do the whole runaround back to Tom Baker, because by the time I started watching, they'd showed the Sixth Doctor and then went back to Hartnell and did the whole run straight from there, from the episodes they had, of course. They showed him an omnibus version. But one of the things I thought was really cool was when they got to The Invisible Enemy, because I read comics of K-9 at that point and was very excited to meet him as a character. And Michael Sheard is stunning in that story. This story dates very badly because of the amount of CSO, color separation overlay, they use. For anyone watching the DVDs, and this might give Sean a chance to enjoy Guilty Pleasure more than once, is the altered special effects in the To Entertain DVD are stunningly beautiful and well done. It gives you a good chance to watch it twice. I like Professor Marius. Can't recall the extras very much in the set, but I do know that they recorded two endings, one which K-9 did not go with them, and then the one where he did. And so I just think I really miss the ticker tape coming out of his chin with all sorts of readouts and things. But, you know, that probably dates more than anything else in K-9's timeline. But really do appreciate how much fun. And I guess John Leeson was also the giant prawn, as they call it. And while some of the movement that they had worked into the prawn was too noisy to use on set, I think it's not a bad prop. I mean, the fact that a microbe might, when it's blown up, look like a shrimp is probably a little far-fetched, but the concept of a virus enlarging itself to take over the universe or galaxy or solar system, any of the above, is kind of fun at the end that the Doctor blows up the place, Titan. And then Leela goes, well, this is my idea, which it was. And I think that Louise Jameson is actually, she gives a really strong performance in this too. I've really never been in any way underwhelmed by any of her performances in Doctor Who, and I'm glad that she's gone on to do so well in the Big Finish audios. And I guess just a few weeks back, Louise Jameson had tweeted that they just recorded the final series of Gallifrey, which I guess both series 5 and series 6 are coming out next year, which, is very disappointing, but I don't know how it's going to end. It probably is going to be very interesting, so I'm really curious about that, because listening to Dark Eyes, Romana's not president in Dark Eyes, so I'm curious to see what the setup is going to be. And I refer you to an interview I did at the 2010 Chicago TARDIS with Gary Russell, commenting on how he treats the two K-9s, one K-9, Leela and Romana, versus what happens in the Time War. And I think that little bitty moment of interest from Russell T. Davis is extremely compelling and heartwarming, because they're definitely beloved characters, especially K-9. So anyway, hope you guys are going to enjoy talking about that. Can't wait to hear what you have to say. And I'll talk to you guys soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Dr. Phil. You're absolutely right. K-9 is a beloved character.
And I'm just glad to hear that Dr. Phil is going to support my position on this.
Obviously, we're not going to discuss too much Invisible Enemy until we finish feedback and start our reviews.
But I will say this. Yes, I have a couch that you can sleep on, and we'll work on the money for the car trip down. Listeners, if you'd like to bring Dr. Phil to Topeka, buy something from the Amazon store. Who's next?
Holly sent in some feedback, said, thoughts on The Invisible Enemy and the Sunmakers. Hey guys, looking forward to this companion archive. I'm going to keep this email brief to hear what you and the others have to say about these two stories. There was action, adventure, and intrigue to be had. I have to say that I enjoyed both The Invisible Enemy and The Sunmakers greatly. Getting to see more Leela as she's learning is great, and she can handle herself with no problems when faced with a group of bad guys. I can see where K-9 got some of his attitude from. Too bad they couldn't have kept Dr. Marius around for a little while. Leela bonding right away with K-9 was a nice touch. K-9 didn't come with a user's manual, but doctors here... One bit of advice, don't go spelling around the highly intelligent robot doc. He knows what you're spelling and is probably not going to listen to you anyway. Also, don't lie about saying it was the TARDIS's fault about disrupting the chess game that you were going to lose. To paraphrase a certain golden android, let the tin dog win. Holly from Wisconsin. She's got a good point there.
Yes. And thank you, Holly.
Next up, Chrissy.
I'm glad Holly is supporting my position on this story.
You're going to be a little surprised about me.
Chrissy writes, Dear Vortex Boys, since Keith brought it up last week, I have some things to say about Snow White and the Huntsman. The problem with Snow White and the Huntsman isn't that it's a fairy tale retelling, per se. The problem with Snow White and the Huntsman is the same problem that the Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland had. For some bizarre reason, movie makers have the weird urge to take female characters from classic stories and turn them into these warrior women, Amazon-type characters when they were never meant to be that kind of character. It just comes off as bad fan fiction. The characters are turned completely around, and they aren't the ones you recognize from the classic story. At least in Ever After, Drew Barrymore's character had elements of the original Cinderella, but they just made her a real person. She was tough and brave without having to be She-Ra. Kristen Stewart's character is a girl shoved in a suit of armor and plopped on a horse with a sword, wondering how in the crap she got there, and her name happens to be Snow White. I hate that the movie studios feel the need to cater to this made-up female demographic that demands that all women in movies have to be this badass, take-no-prisoners, Xena-type thing. Frankly, it's stupid, especially if the character originally wasn't written that way. If they want to make a good movie with a female warrior, why haven't they made a Wonder Woman movie yet? That's what I want to know.
She brings up a good point, although I would argue
She comes up with several great points. I'm completely behind her on that.
I agree.
100%.
I would argue, though, the bigger problem with Alice in Wonderland...
It was a
sequel that replaced a sequel that already existed.
What sequel already existed?
Alice Through the Looking Glass. Well, they haven't done a decent Alice in Wonderland story, period.
Not even the animated Disney one?
That's a classic, but it's not good compared to the book.
Okay, I'll give you that.
I would agree with that. I completely agree with what Chrissy's saying here. The movie studios have this, they're under this perception that they have to be, it's not even politically correct. It's like the feminists have gotten a hold of movies. And I'm going to sound a little chauvinistic saying this, but I agree with her. I think there is this made-up demographic of female fans that feel like there has to be these She-Ra types. I agree. I think that they can make strong female characters that are already strong female characters from existing sources. If you're going to redo something, I agree. Let's do Wonder Woman. Let's do something or come up with an original idea. I'm not opposed to having strong female lead characters in films or even warrior-like female characters in films. Heck, Red Sonja is one of my favorite films as a kid. But what I don't want to see is them reinventing characters that were already established in a certain way. And I think she hits the mark exactly on this, on her statement.
I 100% agree. The remark here about Kristen Stewart's character is a girl shoved in a suit of armor, plopped on a horse with a sword, wondering how in the crap she got there. That really encapsulates that scene. Now, at this point in the movie, I've already written off Kristen Stewart as a character. I don't care that she's in the movie at all. So now she's going to pick up a sword and supposedly knows how to use it, despite the fact that she has spent... The entire
movie. She's more
believable
than the rest of the movie.
But that's just it. She's not. Because as a character, Snow White's, what, 9 when the queen invades and takes over the kingdom?
Yeah.
And she spends from 9 to 18 locked in a cellar or the tower, you know, dungeon room, and then gets out and after a week knows everything there is to know about. The huntsman showed her a little bit about how to handle a weapon. That's it. But she can get on a horse and ride. That's completely unbelievable. And I agree with her.
On female characters, to quote Joss Whedon, somebody once asked him, why do you write these strong female characters? Because I think he is a good example of a strong female character that's not this Kristen Stewart Snow White version. Buffy.
He writes female characters that are not... Okay.
He writes strong female characters.
I would just say the same thing about James Cameron. Back and look at Terminator.
Exactly.
He writes these female characters.
Well, Joss's response to that question?
Which is?
Because you're still asking me that question.
The thing with Cameron in Terminator, she goes from damsel in distress to serious... badass. But there's a whole progression of why she goes from one to the other. She's not plopped onto a horse with a sword and a suit.
Well, and with
wondering how she got there.
It's
written that way, and it's written very strong, and it's convincing. I believe that she's this 80s pop girl, you know, that just is going about her life in Terminator. And I also believe that she's this really badass mother who's trying to protect herself and her child in Terminator 2.
Absolutely.
Because the character evolves and develops, and she becomes a very strong warrior-like.
And in both of these instances, in both the Cameron and Whedon examples, we're talking about characters that are created and written to be a certain way versus taking an existing character
and forcing them to be...
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree.
We agree with you, Chrissy. Okay. And here are the Disney Pixar movies that are similar to the DreamWorks movies. These either came out the same year or within a year of each other. Make of that what you will. Disney, A Bug's Life. DreamWorks, Ants.
Agreed.
Disney, Monsters, Inc. DreamWorks, Shrek. Both are about a type of monster.
Apples and oranges.
I think that's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, that is a bit of a stretch.
But I mean, she has a point. They both came out at the same time. Disney, Finding Nemo. DreamWorks, A Shark's Tale. Both are about fish.
I'm middle of the road on that one.
Disney, The Wild. DreamWorks, Madagascar. Yes, I know The Wild isn't a Pixar movie, but the similarities are so obvious.
And that's absolutely true. That one's absolutely... A Bug's Life and The Wild, I wholeheartedly agree with. Monster, Inc., Apples to Oranges. Finding Nemo and Shark's Tale. The problem with is they're two... Just because they happen underwater, they did come out the same year, and they were capitalizing on the fact that they were fish. But they are two distinctly different stories. They're two adventures. I mean, they're two completely different adventures. So, agreed that they probably... go in this category in the sense that they were trying to mock each other.
Yeah,
exactly. But that one, but Monsters, Inc. and Shrek, that's apples and oranges. Because those are two completely different even ideas and stories.
In any case, thanks for doing the research for us, Chrissy. reviews. These are her reviews, not ours yet. The Invisible Enemy. Are you ready, Glenn? I liked this story a lot. It goes really quick, and the plot is never boring. It's an interesting concept, an alien race trying to invade as a germ/virus/sickness. And we've seen the Doctor travel to other planets and time periods, but we've never seen him travel within his own body. That sequence was a lot of fun. I think the rapid changes of scenery help the pacing of this story. They don't stay too long in any one area, and that means the plot moves, and that keeps me interested. The Sunmakers. Leela is easily my favorite in this story. I love how she fights the rebels when they try to kill her, and then she chews them out about not being brave when she asks for help in rescuing the Doctor. Also, there's some fantastic camera work in this story. That's not something I typically cue into, but there were some nice close-ups on characters and upward shots from K-9's point of view. There's one that I really liked when Leela says she's scared, and K-9 tells her she's scared because of the chemical in the air. The camera goes in for a closer shot of her face, and she has this look on her face that she realizes there's nothing to be afraid of, and then she's back to being her usual tough warrior self. The only thing that bugs me is that they keep talking about a company, in quotation marks, but companies don't levy taxes and they don't imprison people. It's more like a dystopian government like in The Hunger Games or the Matched trilogy. Plus, these rebels just aren't very good at being rebels. Recruiting at gunpoint isn't the greatest strategy to get people to be sympathetic to your cause. They'll switch loyalties if the other side threatens them to. On the whole, both of these stories are pretty good, and I enjoyed them quite a bit. Chrissy.
Can I address something in this, even though we're going to review this in a little bit?
Oh,
I think
suppose.
She's absolutely right with the dystopian government. However, I think that the writer of this story or the producers of this story are also trying to equate the company idea, the feel, right down to the fact that it happens in hallways of what looks like an office building.
Yeah.
I think they're trying to make a parallel here in a statement within this, and I think that's why they go that direction, but she's absolutely right. It's more of a dystopian government.
Part of the idea is,
and they don't enslave workers, and they don't
but if a company was allowed to take over an entire planet, who's to say they wouldn't levy taxes and take people prisoner?
But they would then become dystopian. They would become a government.
Then there would be a government. But they could still be called a company.
They're looking at themselves as a company in this.
Yeah.
But ultimately, that's what they are. They become a government at that point.
Ultimately, in this entire story, they're a government.
And they are. Here's the difference, though, is what you're looking at it from the point of Pluto, from within, it's a government. But because the company is galactic and has wide-reaching interests in other areas, they're just a company. It just happens to be how this particular branch of the company is being run, that it appears to be a progressive totalitarian. And it probably didn't start off that way, obviously, when he gives the backstory about we started on Mars and then went, you know. I mean, there was a lot of relocation going on that probably seemed like this was a good thing. But as I pointed out several times on Friday Night Who, it's Weyland-Yutani. Building better worlds.
Yeah, good point.
The title of her email was, what is it, Two Things Never Change, Death and Taxes?
Yep.
I'm paraphrasing now, I'm sorry.
Two Things Certain in Life.
Two Things Certain in Life, Death and Taxes. So thank you, Chrissy. Hey, my final is tomorrow. That's good to know.
Which one?
Mass Media Boot Camp at 1:30.
Did you just get that email?
I just got that email.
Oh. Congratulations.
That'll give you an idea of how organized my teacher for that class is.
So what you're saying is it'll be a relatively easy test.
Probably not.
Oh, no. All right.
Well, I got to go. I got to go study.
That's it for this week.
I'm Sean.
All right. The Invisible Enemy.
I can't leave before we talk about the Invisible Enemy, though.
While answering a mayday from a refueling station on Saturn's largest moon, the TARDIS passes through a mysterious cloud that carries a space virus. The Doctor is soon infected and fighting for control of his mind. Leela's only hope lies on a nearby medical satellite, where she seeks help from an eccentric scientist, Professor Marius.
Marius.
I keep trying to put an N in there. And his dog-shaped computer, K-9!
That's the end?
That's it.
Is everybody going to agree with me, or am I going to get grief for doing this? Dun, dun, dun!
I done, done, done it. It's not that big of a done, 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 but I done, done, done it.
What do you mean you done, done, done?
I done, done, this one. I don't hate this story. I hate elements, or I don't. I dislike elements of this story. Overall, I enjoy the story. I've enjoyed it since I was a kid.
This is an enjoyable story.
I like
story.
To beat you up over it, but.
Glenn's just yanking my chain.
It's not so much that. You really set this way up high.
I do.
I completely disagree with that. And I don't see. I'm ready for you to review this so you can talk about why you really? Set this on such an elevated plane.
K-9.
I want to know where Keith stands on this quiz, because number one, this is the first story that introduces K-9, which is his favorite companion, and I just want to know how he felt seeing this for the first time, because I saw this as a kid. This is my third viewing.
Yeah,
I just watched it again this weekend. So
it took its time to get to K-9.
It kind of does.
It does. It's almost like Sarah Jane.
Going to get off tight and then get to the.
Which I agree with Chrissy. There's a lot of good pacing in this, and it moves. I was never bored throughout this entire story.
I agree with that.
The ideas behind it are great. Glenn, you've mentioned how the canine we meet here isn't the canine we know later. I can see some of that, but there's so much of the building blocks of the canine I love that's here.
It's not a grave difference. Don't get me wrong. It's not this huge like progression of he was like this one way and then he suddenly is this whole different character.
It's not like Locke from Lost.
Right. No, exactly. or Dick Sargent to Dick York York to Dick Sargent. Yes. I had it right the first time.
Sergeant York
in Bewitched. So,
and
Darren was a Time Lord.
Might have been.
He totally regenerated. Quick, Glenn, do the Bewitched theme song.
Oh, I can't do that one. Oh no.
Okay, it kind of turns into the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson at that point. Sorry, Keith, that was before your time.
You thought you were going to stop me.
I remember.
You thought you were going to get me.
And then I panicked because after I threw it out there, all I could think of was I Dream of Jeannie. No, that's not right.
That's what happened to me. Is it went in there and it went, dun, 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 dun. No, that's not it. That's not it.
Okay, Bewitched. Dun, 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 dun. No, that's not it. Throw it away. It just kept coming back.
I got there. It just went. It was like, and then it just hit me, and I went, yeah, there it is. All right.
I'm sorry, Keith. Go ahead.
I'm batting 1,000.
And the idea of this virus is fantastic. Marius inventing this robot dog.
You got a good job.
To
replace his own dog.
To replace his own dog.
Replace his real dog.
And be his assistant. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. The ticker tape, I don't so much agree with Dr. Phil. Unless he's printing out results of something, I don't want that coming out of his mouth. But maybe that's because I'm seeing this backwards and seeing him not used to seeing the tape coming out of his mouth.
That may be part of it. I don't miss the ticker tape myself either, but
I always thought it was cool, but it was to analyze, because it would come out later, and then he would tear it off and look at it.
Yeah, that's what the impression I got, that this was results of whatever he's scanning. So the going inside the doctor, I really enjoyed.
Fantastic Voyage.
That's, or as Chrissy and I called it, the Magic School Bus.
Yeah, this is that's just the part of it that's hard for me to swallow.
Because it's never ripped off another film. Well, it's not even that.
I agree with everything that you've just said so far up to this point.
This part is the fact that it's not the Doctor and it's not Leela. It's clone replicants, which, granted, sloppily explained.
Yes,
but it's not.
There's a big part of the problem.
But it's not actually Leela and the Doctor going inside the Doctor to try to figure out what's going on. It's the replicants of them.
And I'm like, okay.
I'll accept this.
It's a time limit on two replicants.
That makes sense to me.
That you're going to clone.
That makes sense.
That are life. This is new life. This is something genuine. That we're accepting the fact that they're just going to dissolve and die. So their time span is 10 minutes, and the Doctor's fine with this because it's okay to go in and find the virus that's in his body that's been infected in this way. That was a hard pill to swallow.
When Marius is describing it, and he's explaining that it's a photostatic copy of yourself. It's not really that. So in that instance, it's not a clone. Yeah, it's not really a clone.
It's a 3D photocopy of yourself
that retains all of your organic DNA and all of your memories.
I know that's just the same.
I'm sorry, that's tough. That is so tough for me.
I don't have a problem. Explanation.
Then we go into this whole fantastic journey thing where we go into, and I'm never one to poo-poo.
In that sense, production. We're fantastic in that.
I'm never one to poo-poo production, but I really thought the sets, while they were elaborate and done well for what they were, it never convinced me that they were inside his brain. That was just, it looked wrong. So they're chasing around inside. Now we're not running through corridors; we're running through synapses, and we're trying to find this virus, which I like. I love the idea of this invading virus. I love the fact that this virus has to incubate in the humans or the humanoids, and then eventually it'll be able to be extrapolated and take over everything I like that idea.
Contact has
The Fantastic Voyage ripoff was just more of a... I looked at it and I thought, yes, we've ripped off other movies before, but this one was almost just... Part of it is because it's just real blatant. It's just really right there smacking the face. Now, there's not a lot of... I mean, it's just that one small piece of this story that
almost
is the ripoff.
Almost an episode of the four.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know.
Quite honestly, better done than the episode of the four of Deadly Assassin, where he goes into the Matrix to fight holographic trains.
I disagree. But
I think this is done well, but much better.
I really like the Matrix.
Oh, I do too. But I still think this is done better.
Really?
The point I laugh at about this
is the virus not so much taking over. I like the idea of it spreading. It's the display of the virus.
Well, we're doing what we've got.
Yeah,
I'm a little forgiving of that as well.
The lightning between, or the...
No, the lightning, that was okay
The hairy eyebrows?
The hairy eyebrows.
The crystals on the eyes, essentially. I didn't have a problem with that at all.
But of this story, that small microcosm within the entire story is my only issue, really. Because I thought the model work for the ship was fantastic. Man, that thing looked great. I like where we go from the point where it's because of Leela's whatever she left in the Doctor is what basically is the cure, and so they realize that they can replicate that from her and cure everybody else.
And Leela's primitiveness allows her not to be.
Yes.
Hijacked.
Fantastic. Yes. Love that. I love the fact that...
Unsuitable.
I like the battle that we're having in the hallway outside afterwards with her and K-9. That's fantastic. Her interaction with K-9 is fantastic. Her just really warming up to them becoming fast friends was fantastic. I love that. That was great. I had no problem
with that.
Yeah, I had no problem. No problem with that whatsoever.
And K-9's monitor.
I do have a problem with when they shoot that wall next to... K-9, and you can see it scored.
Did you happen to watch the special effects Extravaganza version of it?
I didn't.
Dr. Phil pointed out, make sure you watch that version of it just for giggles. It's completely redone. You can't tell that it's pre-scored. It's a different effect.
Oh,
it
wow.
looks amazing.
Oh, too bad they didn't put that in the outro.
No, but we don't introduce Keith to those.
Purist. The monitor. Canines. I had no idea that that side of canine was a monitor. A video monitor.
They didn't use that much, to be honest.
They never.
I think they had to have probably rotoscoped it in something.
Yeah.
And
after
one episode when it became, he's going to be a regular. We either shoot him from the other side every single time.
We saw that side of him in the Sunmakers. We just never saw it.
It was just never on.
Yeah. Yeah.
You see that side. It's just never working.
Yeah, I'm sure that was a production manager going, we're not doing that again.
I really think later on that monitor is not on the other side of canine. There's
always a
things,
little
is there?
Thing
because
there.
I remember always seeing, because I remember every once in a while as a kid seeing that side and going, where's the K9? Oh, yeah, it's only on the other
side.
There's times I remember that side just being flush and nothing on it.
It's always...
My bobblehead has a monitor on it.
Well, but your bobblehead could be from that first season of Leela. I mean, well, we were talking about the console room. I think this was the first episode of the season, and the last season was when that...
This was the first time we see the new console.
Yeah, she's walking in with the coat rack,
right.
And she's like, where are we? I've never been here before. No, you've never been here before. This is the backup or auxiliary control, whatever
right,
you call
because
it.
Because she remembered the 70s panel.
Yeah.
Console room.
The wood panel room.
Which, if I remember right, I think got destroyed or something between seasons. For some reason, I think I read somewhere that it...
They never explained the new story.
Oh, you mean...
In real life. Yeah, that something happened to that. And I don't remember. I don't recall it real well, but I think that something actually happened.
That would be an interesting show to do, is the history of the console room and
The changes
is maybe more visual than podcast, but I don't know.
But besides the fantastic voyage element of this episode, I enjoy this. I think it's a great story. I love Leela in this. I love K-9 in this. I think it's wonderfully done, and
the
I don't have any problems with it.
Of the Doctor being hijacked by this virus, I really like that idea, because there's so very few stories where the Doctor is almost immobilized.
Shows
and almost
his vulnerability.
Taken. Yeah. Until more new series, you don't see that vulnerability that you do in class, that this shows.
Unless it's a regeneration.
It's more common in new series.
Spoilers.
I haven't seen that one yet. It's just, I. That's one of the things I like about this. There's very
that's
negative
what the snowmen
things.
Are.
Oh, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. No.
After seeing Invisible Enemy, I want to now own this DVD set.
Cactus reference.
Because so you didn't before, because of K-9 and Company?
Well.
K-9. And you know when I first...
It makes me want to own it even more.
When I first borrowed this from you and found out that K-9 and Company episode was on here, I thought, how bizarre. I mean, even though this is K-9's introduction, how bizarre to put this on K-9 and Company on the same disc as the Invisible Enemy. And then I got to thinking about it was... Well, duh. You wouldn't put K-9 and Company on a Liz Sladen one. It would have been foolish because at this time, Liz Sladen's home, so these could have actually been happening simultaneously with each other. Two different timelines, certainly, because this is in the future, but this would have been this would have been just a few stories after Sarah left and Leela joined, and...
That's why it wouldn't make sense for it to be on a Liz Sladen
set. It's a different K-9, too.
Because...
It is a different K-9 as well, but we learn how she gets this her version of the K-9 in this as well.
Right.
So that's why I think it works well on this, because it doesn't have to be a Liz Sladen story. That was my problem with it. Why wouldn't you put this on a Liz Sladen story?
It's in K-9 and Company, right? That we learn how.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
It makes sense because... Sarah Jane never interacted with K-9 in the originals.
I know, but my point is that putting this on a Liz Sladen, and it's like she's with the Doctor. Oh, point. She's without the Doctor. Where do you put that?
Unless it's the very last story.
So it totally makes sense to put it with K-9's first episode.
I agree with that. My turn?
Your turn.
top to bottom. Everything in this episode is fantastic. Everything. It doesn't. Brain of Morbius is Frankenstein. And we love
very, 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 very loosely based on Frankenstein.
Seeds of Doom is the thing.
Very, 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 very,
okay. This is very, 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 very loosely based. With the exception of no, you can't do that. You can't pick that apart. No, you can't pick that apart because the one part of Brain of Morbius is Frankenstein. Frankenstein doesn't have Sisters of the Flame. But we associate all of that with Frankenstein. You look at Seeds of Doom, and only the first two parts in Antarctica are the thing.
You're right. You're
and the four
right.
parts aren't. There's only one part out of four in this that's Fantastic Voyage.
Did the original thing crash in Antarctica? I haven't seen the original thing.
You've never seen it?
I've only seen John Carpenter's thing.
Well, that's Antarctica.
Yeah, but that came out after this.
That's true. The Thing from Another World is also Antarctica.
It's also based on Day of the Triffids and Thing from Another World. I mean, that's Seeds of Doom comes from all of that.
So. Well, it's Who Goes There by Campbell.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Is it Campbell? Boy, I shouldn't have said that now. I want to say it's Joseph Campbell,
right now.
But now that I've said it, I don't think it's the story is Who Goes There, that's for sure.
Yes.
But I don't remember the author. At any rate, from top to bottom, everything in this episode is fantastic. We start with, as you pointed out, the fantastic model work on this Titan shuttle. Mm-hmm. That whole bit is just great. And we get to Titan, and it's this it's Bespin. It's a mining facility on Titan, which makes total sense now that we know more about the chemical makeup of Titan.
Yeah.
Look at some serendipity there. And we pass through this weird, funky cloud, and we start growing hairy eyebrows, and we get these really great shots of the crew where they're joking and they're jovial, and they're, if I'm going to be bounced around, I'm going to be the one to do it. And they've got personalities. These are real working stiff astronauts, right? But then all of a sudden we land, and we should be happy. We're on Titan. And they're not. They're very silently going through, and they put the space helmets on so we can't see them, and then they go to the weapons closet, get this, and this tension starts ratcheting up. It's like, what's going on? And we get into the thing, and the relief crew, hey, we're happy to see you. Boom, boom, boom. And they're down. It's like, oh, big moment. And then the visor reveal. It's like, oh, that's fantastic, because it's creepy. It's way better than, quite honestly, it's better than Astronauts of Death. Even though there's a part
ambassadors?
Of me, or Ambassadors of Death.
Astronauts of Death.
It very much invoked that idea.
I did. And normally, I like not seeing the monster. I really do. I like not being shown it. But there's something about the way Ambassadors was done that's just so blank and nothing happened with these guys in the spacesuits that when these guys show up, you kind of start to get that vibe for them. And then all of a sudden, we've shown you something different. It's like, oh, okay. Then we go to Supervisor Low. Poor Supervisor Lowe's got to be having the worst day in the history of bad days. He's here, he's on Titan, he's stuck in this dead-end job, supervising these losers who are downstairs partying while he's manning the ship and doing all the important work. And then the relief crew shows up, and they try to shoot at him, and they kill his buddies who weren't doing anything anyway, and he's got to escape out the airlock. So he's running around on the surface of Titan.
Lowe played by?
Yeah, you pointed that out. I didn't know that. Did you know this? Supervisor Lowe?
Admiral Ozzel?
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
No, I didn't realize that.
Didn't pick up on it until he said that.
I knew he was an Imperial, and during Friday Night Who, I named him somebody else, and I looked him up and corrected myself.
Yeah, Admiral Ozzel. So, but then he's smart.
Our listeners that may not know who Admiral Ozzel is, especially those that have never seen Empire Strikes Back.
Shame on you.
He was one of the admirals. He led the... was the ground assault?
No, that's Veers.
That is Veers. Donovan.
Donovan.
Yeah. Or
Count Scaramanga. No.
No, that's
that's
Golden
Bond.
Man with the Golden Bond gun. Scaraloni? No. Scarion? No.
City of Death bad guy.
Yeah, City of Death bad guy.
And in
Scarion.
Crusades. He was the king, wasn't he? Wasn't he King Richard in the Crusades? The Hartnell? He's been a Doctor Who twice.
No.
Yeah.
He's not that old, is he? I don't think he's that old. He was also in a Bond film. He was in For Your Eyes Only.
Yes, he was.
Whoa! Ozzel has been in six stories of Doctor Who.
Wow. Well,
what? First, third, fourth, fifth, and seventh Doctors.
I'll be done.
What?
Yeah.
Go Ozzy.
Now go bite the head off a bat. house was he in?
Hold on.
Just because I'm curious now.
He also worked with Egg Doctor.
Oh, we turned Keith loose on him to buy.
In Stones of Venice. No, this is Wiki.
Stones of Venice. Oh, he was in the audio?
Mm-hmm.
Was it Stones of Venice? Was that the Eighth Doctor one?
Yes, because I have it right in front of me. Stones of Venice.
That doesn't sound like the right title for some reason, but I'm sure you're right. The one where Venice sang, can we complain about it not being good? Okay. That's all I really remember of that one. Futuristic Venice sank. Okay.
Not to be confused with Stones of Blood, which was...
Yeah, what's one with these of titles?
He was the Duke.
Really? I'm way more excited than that than I should be.
Yes, you are.
Anyway, so but Lo turns out to be a pretty smart cookie because he comes back in the airlock door. Like, they leave him outside, and then they wander off. But he comes back in. It's like, oh, this guy's smart. Now, of course, why didn't they guard the airlock? I don't know. It doesn't matter. They're possessed. We've got to get the thing going. Right. And so then he gets infected himself, and you felt bad because he was just trying to do the right thing. He felt bad for shooting his buddy, even though they weren't doing anything. And zzz, then he gets zapped. And so now he's out, but he's smarter than the rest of them because he puts the flash visor on and he's playing Leela for a fool. I love Leela in this story because we get those interactions with them in the TARDIS and the little bit of, you know, just them. Just
like
them being...
All of these elements so far. Yeah.
All of that stuff that we never see going on because we immediately land and go off and have an adventure. I like those little quiet moments in the TARDIS. I love that kind of stuff. I think Leela is so well written in this episode, despite the fact that she is a quote unquote reject and that it's her primitiveness that saves her from this. But
that makes her the most enjoyable.
It makes her the most enjoyable. It makes everything that she does in this is handled with a very well written turn of events. From the way she acts on Titan, that she can sense evil, from the way that they get to the thing, and her overwhelming concern for the Doctor, despite the fact that she has to sneak past several different levels of bureaucratic security that she doesn't understand.
Yeah, Lilo's story in this is very well calculated.
Her interactions with K-9, her interactions with Marius, her interactions with the Doctor, possessed or otherwise, everything works with Leela in this story. It's fantastic. The hospital. We've got a hospital in an asteroid. That's just cool.
And it's later revisited by Star Wars.
Later revisited by me in my book, subconsciously.
Was there a hospital and an asteroid on Star
Where
Wars?
Do you think Luke and Leia was birthed? Yeah. Gave birth to?
Yeah.
Was that on an asteroid?
That was an asteroid.
Oh, I thought they were on a ship.
An asteroid.
Oh, I thought they were on the Tantive 4.
No. Oh.
It's not Tantive.
I don't remember that.
Tantive is where C-3PO and R2 end up.
Yeah, they go with
Obi-Wan
Captain
and Yoda have that conversation after the kids.
Yeah,
they're on Tantive 4. Yeah. Yoda and
because they have that conversation. They take the Tantive to go drop off the kids. Anyway,
yeah,
I did not realize
they're
that
on
they
an
were
asteroid.
Yeah,
on
some random PXL4 something. I don't know. That had
there was even a card for it.
Was there? I don't remember that.
I think I remember a card.
I don't remember that either.
I remember the droid had a card, which I thought was stupid. But anyway,
maybe the droid is wrong.
We're sidetracking here. At any rate, I love the idea of having we've got interstellar, you know, not interstellar, but intersolar travel within the system, and that we're visiting these other planets. And yeah, a lot of it's mining operations, stuff like that. Asteroid belt makes perfect sense to have a hospital. It's midway point. I mean, it's not to Mars. It's nothing. Yeah. Okay. Go with it. And I love the setup. I love the sets. I love everything that's done in here. And then K-9 shows up, and the episode goes up even higher because K-9's cool, and he's got a video monitor and ticker tape, and he looks like a dog, and he's not, and he's got a real rationale for being there. That is the most genius thing about this character.
That works
really
well.
Is that he's not just a robot dog. Mm-hmm.
He's not there as a gimmick.
He's got a backstory.
He's got a backstory, and a realistic one, that because of the weight penalty, I couldn't bring my dog from home. Okay, I'll buy that for a dollar. Yeah. Now, this is the part that you're going to complain about, the inside the brain, all right? I have no problem with this whatsoever. And here's my reasoning for this. As we've established, these are photostatic copies of yourselves. These aren't real clones. So they're just, like you said, it's a three-dimensional photocopy. Okay, poof, done. So the Doctor's not really sacrificing anybody. He's not creating life just to discard it later. Mm. It really is
I got the impression
photocopy
that
you're going to tear up and throw away after the meeting. It's a memo.
I got the impression that it wasn't so much... set time that it was just a limitation of the technology.
Yeah, well, and that was why when he asked...
They say about, we got about 10 minutes.
When he asked, yeah, tell me about
only
cloning.
Only because, yeah.
And K-9's spouting off, and Marius walks into the room. He says, it's a parlor trick. It's not real science, because they could never make it work. That was the thing. And I totally buy that we've set up cloning as this ultimate medical... You know, oh, this could be it. And I like the idea of that not working. That, no, it wound up never, we could never find a way to make it work. That, yes, you could create a person, a fully grown human copy of yourself. But they evaporated after 10 minutes because they couldn't hold the molecular structure together. Okay, I'm in. That totally is not any different to me than anything else Doctor Who science-y has come up with, and it's a heck of a lot more science.
I'm not saying that it's not. I'm not saying that it's not believable. I'm okay with that. They at least explain the science. It's just it seemed to me all three times that I saw it that it was more than just. It was like creating even for 10 minutes. It was like creating another life that's going to have all these memories, all of these feelings, all these emotions, everything that the real person has, and they're only going to get 10 minutes of life. And the doctor's okay with that. It doesn't seem like something that the doctor could do.
Even if it was a kid,
well, no, the last couple of times.
Okay, now see, that's just it, because I can understand.
I re-explored it when I saw it the next time. We've gone
in much more interesting direction with clone stories in science fiction, where clones have gotten... personalities and lives and things that I could see the ethic and moral obligations of creating that life springing to mind.
That being said, though, I do recall as a kid thinking, wow, that really sucks to come into existence for 10 minutes and then you're gone. It's like being, it's like a house fly lives for like 24 hours and then they don't know any better. But, I mean, I always contemplated the fact that, wow, you get to exist for like 10 minutes and that's it. I mean, so it wasn't that I really was... pondering the ethics or the philosophy of it as a kid, but on a smaller level, I that used to disturb. Maybe that's why I came into it going, well, the doctor really should be concerned about this, because I was concerned about it as a kid, thinking that would just suck.
That's the education they're trying to bring into this, of the idea of cloning and how it's not perfect and.
Could be. It still doesn't make a. It doesn't make a good element of the story for me.
Maybe that just shows the level to which
it takes the doctor out of its character for me.
Well, maybe that just shows the level to which he was fighting the virus. Maybe that's how strong the control was, that he was that desperate that I don't like this, but the only person I'm willing to sacrifice is a carbon copy of myself, and unfortunately, circumstances are going to require me to have one of Leela. But it's better to do that.
I don't know.
Than...
That one's hard. That's the hard pill for me.
Really?
Again, it's not a deal breaker because I still like the story. I think the story is well done, and the science behind it makes sense. It's just the doctor going about those means. It's just every once in a while the doctor does something over the course of 50 years. The doctor every once in a while we'll watch something where the doctor does something that's out of character for the doctor, and to me this is one of those times that took me out of the story just a tad.
About every 3 or 4 years.
Every 4 years I think is a pretty good record. But so we get inside the head, and yes, it's fantastic voyage. I don't care. I love it. Now I will say this: I saw this as a kid long before I ever saw Fantastic Voyage. So that may very easily color my perceptions. When I watched Fantastic Voyage, I was like, oh, this is just like that episode of Doctor Who that I like.
Voyage ran on HBO when I was a kid very often, and I watched it several times before I even started seeing Doctor Who. So that
could explain why I didn't have that. But I love the set. And I that's something else I tweeted on Friday Night Who, is that when... I was in fourth grade. I just switched schools. I'd gone from third grade to fourth grade, and I'd gone to a private school for fourth grade. I went to Topeka Lutheran. And so that was one of this big, I didn't know anybody. I didn't have any friends. There was this huge culture shock going in. And then going into a private school where they were realistically a year ahead of where we were at in private school. So I had a lot of catch up to do. But that was the time frame when I really started to get very big into, I was already big into science fiction, but things like V aired the night before I attended New School. That was the Sunday night kickoff before I went to school Monday for the first day. And so that was on, and I was watching a lot of Doctor Who. And I actually built, on the basis of this episode, I built a K-9 to bring to show and tell. He was made out of a cardboard box.
You still did show and tell in fourth grade?
Yeah. They did. I was surprised. I hadn't done it in years.
Oh, we did. I did. We did show and tell all the way up until fifth grade when I was a kid.
Wow, but, I don't remember that password.
And in fact, I recycled them and used them as my Halloween costume. And I tied every. You guys joked at me. I tied every scarf in the house together, big knots, just to string them together to get a really long Doctor Who scarf. And I found a hat that wasn't anything remotely close, and that's kind of what I had. I didn't have anything else to go off of, but I brought my canine, and it was just a cardboard box that I, with a magic marker, put canine on the side, and then Mom had helped me take a smaller box and kind of sculpt down the front part of it, and then put duct tape on the sides, and I'd put a paintbrush. We found a plastic, it was a red plastic ruler that kind of looked like his eyes, screen, and we put a paintbrush through the middle of it with a Lego radar dish on the end of it. That just happened to fit perfectly on there, so he had an antenna, and we made cardboard ears out of the leftover box, and I mean, that was it. And I found a belt from an old outfit I had as a kid that kind of had the plaid look to it, and I made the collar, and I dragged this thing around school with me. I had him on a leash and dragged him across the floor, and people thought I was nuts because they didn't know. They had no idea what this was that I watched.
Yeah.
You know, it was just beyond comprehension for him. Art project, create something. Like, what do you mean create something? Like, here, anything. Let your imagination go. Here's some construction paper and glue and scissors. Go nuts. You know what I did? I did the inside of Doctor Who's brain. I kid you not. I planned it. I had big archways and sculpting stuff, and it looked a lot like this picture on Wiki. Not as sophisticated, not as cool, made out of construction paper. And it was just weird spiral columns and weird arch things and, you know, just gluing construction paper from one side of the paper to the other. And the teacher came and looked at me. She goes, oh! And she's very just beaming with, look at that. This kid's done. This is a genius. He's going to go far. What is that? Doctor Who's brain. It didn't help my social status in school. So yeah, I was really affected by this as a kid, but my love for it has never tapered. There is absolutely nothing about this, and maybe it's rose-colored glasses. This is one of those quintessential Who episodes for me. This is Tom Baker. He can do no wrong. Every single thing in this episode is fantastic. We get done with all of the fun stuff on the ashtray, and we go back to Titan, and the nucleus is... Yeah, okay, he looks like a big crawdad. I don't care. It doesn't bother me at all. Whatever. And he's going to go spawn. And it's like, oh, creepy. And giant gelatinous egg sacks. Oh, creepy. And we get to... And Canine's finally running out of power. And things are going to go bad. What's going to happen? And then there's that weird cutaway shot. This is my one problem with this. Is the doctor's getting ready to do the thing. And we come to Supervisor Lowe, who's shown up to ruin the day. And then we cut back and the... antidote stuff is on the floor broken, and it's like, what happened here? who was running camera at the BBC who missed the reaction shot mm-hmm. of them dropping the stuff and just went, we'll cut to low and come back? You didn't have a camera on that? I mean, it's a weird jump cut. Like footage is missing or something. I don't know. That's my one problem with it. So then we go back to, okay, I don't care, he dropped the stuff, all right, what do we do? I'm gonna blow it up. I got a gun and a blaster and an oxygen atmosphere. Go. All right. This is going to be cool. And then we get to see it explode on the view screen and everything. Well, now, this is the other interesting thing.
And the doctor gets to the point where he's run out of options.
Yeah.
That's the brilliant thing about the letting it blow up.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
He can't
because he's very John Pertwee in the science lab developing
It's very clear, and they make it very clear at that point that it's the final option too. So I don't have a problem with that either.
Yeah, and I like his rationale for, but you know, I thought you were all life is sacred, and this is kind of the other thing that I don't really have a problem with the clones either, because. It's brought up several times when he's talking to Leela in the TARDIS, and he says, oh, humanity's getting ready to spread throughout the galaxy like a virus. And she says, good foreshadowing there. And she says, I thought you liked humanity. He goes, oh, I do. So my best friends are human. But when you get together in large numbers, other species sometimes suffer. That, to me, is a very doctor thing to say.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And then later when he's talking to the virus, and he's like, it's survival of the fittest. He goes, yeah, I'm not going to begrudge you that. You have every right to succeed and to propagate. As a virus on the molecular level, not on the macroverse. That doesn't work for you. You're not entitled to that. And the fact that he's the one that gave it to him through the dimensional stabilizer. Oops.
Yeah.
But so then this is the fun part. If you go back and watch the special edition, because in the original version, they're watching the view screen and there's this, and they just, boom, explosion. I don't know about Keith. I'm kind of a, or maybe you even, I'm of the opinion he blew the whole planet up. Titan is gone. The moon of Titan no longer exists.
I didn't get that.
Now, if you watch either. The special edition, they've actually got Titan and you see, so they've really clarified that no, he didn't blow up the whole moon.
I never really got that he blew up the whole moon.
Yeah. And of course, I'm laughing because I'm thinking aliens. We take off, we nuke the site from orbit. It's the only way to be sure. I cannot say anything bad about this story. And this was one of the first Target novelizations that I had. So I read it over and over and over, and I fell very, very hard for this story.
You cite a lot of the things that I enjoy about this. I still have there's little bumps in there that just bring it down a bit, but I enjoyed it. Overall, it's a good story. I like it.
Well, let's move on.
The Sun Makers, the TARDIS, along with the Doctor, Leela, and K-9 arrives on Pluto in the distant future. The time travelers discover that the planet has a breathable atmosphere and enjoys heat from 6 small suns. But the humans who live there are taxed and exploited heavily for the privilege. When Leela is captured and sentenced to death, the Doctor must save his companion, as well as stop the ruthless company before it's too late.
Dun, dun, dun.
I give this about the same dun, dun, dun that I give to
I think this is a good pairing.
It really is.
I'm glad it worked out.
Granted,
well, one's right after the other.
No, there's one in between.
There's one in between.
Oh, what's in between these two?
Image of the Findal. Because K-9 wasn't
that's right.
in it,
that's
which
right.
is why he's not he part of this K-9 archive. But,
the reason why this is so enjoyable isn't because of K-9. He's a small part of the story.
He is.
He really is.
And there's a lot of talking, and there's a lot of politics in this story, but it's so well explored.
That Leela shines in this.
Leela shines very heavily. Everybody... the name of the character is escaping me. The main guest star that they meet in the very beginning.
Cordo.
Yes. Is great in this story. He goes through such a growth throughout the entire 4 episodes. From sniveling coward, not being willing to pay his taxes or can't pay his taxes, to willing to join the rebellion, to straight out fighting, not just because he's a part of the rebellion, just because it's the right thing to do. Such a character growth.
I'm going to touch on that. I think he's an enjoyable character. I wouldn't consider it a great amount of character growth. Just because it's he does become. He does go from point A to point B, and he gets braver as we go, and his character does grow. But it's more of an enjoyable journey than a fantastic character growth. It's not a marked character growth to me. But
I guess I see it as more of a character growth than most Doctor Who guest stars get.
Well, maybe that's true.
I think he goes through quite the arc, because when Where you said he starts off as this, and I mean, he's to the point where he's going to throw himself off a building, but then we go underground and he's terrified of the dark because he's never seen it, and fighting with the guys in the basement, and then being the one guy to say, okay, yeah, I'll go with you to rescue the doctor. That is kind of the tipping point where he's on his way. I think there's a lot there.
It was enjoyable.
It's understated, but it's subtle. It's not understated. That's the thing
about this entire story. I think it's understated.
I don't think it's a marked character development, because it's very understated.
It's not the focus of the story.
And it shouldn't be. I agree. It shouldn't be. But it didn't stick out, so maybe that's why I don't see it as a...
Which, really, the title doesn't quite fit.
No, the title is... Yeah, the title is very misleading.
Really, they could have had Dalek show up, and it would have been like, what? I couldn't have been more surprised if I woke up with my head stapled to the carpet. The Sun Makers? What is this episode about?
And the suns play such a small role. Yeah. There's a reference, and that's
Saturday
about it.
Saturday night. I forgot to say this when we did... do our yearly tradition. Holly and I wrapped all our Christmas gifts, and we put Christmas Vacation. That's what made me think of when you told me that last. I'd be more surprised if I woke up with my head stapled to the carpet.
The villain, the boss of the company, so swarmy.
The collector or gatherer?
Both.
Yeah, well, what I liked is that both... That
gatherer, right?
The Dr. Evil character.
Both characters are on the verge of or potential of scenery chewing and over the top.
The one guy...
But really, the two guys, both of them pull it off. They really just pull it off.
Just barely under the mark of chewing the scenery.
Yes, agreed.
Especially the Dr. Evil character, feels so much like
the collector.
James Bond villain who procreated with Riff Raff.
I don't see that.
His voice was very Riff Raff.
He's totally the illegitimate child of Blofeld and Riff Raff.
He doesn't have a Riff Raff voice, though.
He has this squeezy little...
Riff Raff kind of had that voice.
No. Riff Raff was... Riff Raff had more of an Igor type voice. You're talking about Riff Raff from
Rocky Horror.
He didn't have the... It was more of the...
No, that's coming from the Doctor Who... Or the James Bond villain.
No, James Bond villain was... He didn't really have a... There's somebody that has this weaselly voice that I can't put my finger on. And it's not Riff Raff. It's not Blofeld. But he does have the Blofeld look
he's
and
kind of what's his name? Peter Lorre from Casablanca.
Yeah, absolutely. He has a bit of a Peter Lorre. Yeah, there you go. I think he's a mix between
the three.
I hope my brother George is watching.
I don't see any Riff Raff in him at all.
I don't know. I just hear him.
No, Riff Raff has more of a deeper voice. I mean, he still has that nasally voice, but
maybe you're thinking Riff Raff from Shock Treatment as opposed to Riff Raff from Rocky Horror.
Well, Riff Raff's a different. Riff Raff. Well, he's not Riff Raff in that. He's a doctor, whatever. But he is. He's bald, and he does have more of a higher nasally, wheezy voice. Have you seen Shock Treatment?
Yes,
I would equate to. Yeah, absolutely. He's not Riff. He's not Riff at all. He's whatever the character. I've only seen Shock Treatment a couple of times, but he is definitely that character.
That's probably two times too many.
I'm surprised I saw Shock Treatment twice. Absolutely love Rocky Horror. I've seen that hundreds and hundreds of times. I've been to several live show or audience participation shows for that.
Have you seen it on stage?
No, I haven't. I've heard it's good.
Oh, it is really good.
But I've only seen Shock Treatment twice, and it's a horrible, horrible movie. And I've seen it twice, which is weird, but I saw it twice.
Maybe you went back for the second one I missed something.
Somebody showed it to me, and then...
You forgot you saw it?
No, I don't think it was even that I forgot it. I think I showed it to somebody else, and I ended up watching it.
Explain to me why I hate this, because it sucks. Okay.
No, it was... Actually, what happened was it was shown to me by Dave Euler, who said... This is a sequel to Rocky Horror. And I said, what?
It's a kind of.
Are you kidding me? He says, yeah, it's got Brad and Janet. The narrator's in it. Richard O'Brien's in it. Much of the actors came back and did this. Unfortunately, it's not Barry Bostwick and Susan Sarandon. But this is kind of a.
And it's still written by Richard O'Brien.
Yeah, exactly. He says, this is a sequel. And I said, what? I'd never heard of it before. I'd been doing Rocky Horror for years and never heard of Shock Treatment. So we sit down and we watch Shock Treatment. And I go, oh, that's horrible. And he says, yeah, exactly. It's not very good. But as a Rocky Horror fan, you have to know at least that this exists. I still own the video cassette copy of it.
Did you know they did a two-pack?
And so. No, I didn't.
Rocky Horror and Shock Treatment and a dual disc version.
As a Rocky Horror fan, you have to own the dang movie.
The 25th anniversary edition of Rocky.
That's too bad. You have to own the dang movie.
Yeah, because that's
the one.
That's kind of the quintessential. If you're going to own Rocky Horror, own the 25th anniversary.
Because you get the audience participation version.
Yeah,
that's what I do.
What's his name? Eric McCormick as Frank, who's amazing.
So anyway, so I had in the last 10 years had a friend that I came across that they liked Rocky Horror, and I said, hey, did you know there's a sequel? And I went through the whole mess, and I had to show him Shock Treatment.
Yeah, I'll be honest.
And he said, yeah, that's not a very good movie. I said, exactly, but as a Rocky Horror fan, you have to have seen Shock Treatment.
I came to the party late on both of those. I had not seen Rocky Horror until Dave introduced me to it.
Was that at his house?
Yeah. And, so I was the virgin in the audience for that. And then I think Carrie was there with me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. we were both. But I had known about shock treatment from my years working at Suncoast. So I knew this movie existed, but I didn't put two and two together until well after we watched Rocky Horror. Then I realized that, yes, it's a sequel. And I know that I've seen
part of it. We keep saying it's a sequel. It's not really a sequel.
It's a quasi-sequel.
It is. It's a quasi-sequel.
I know that I've seen part of it. I don't know that I've ever seen the whole thing, quite honestly. Not that I really don't have bother. Any desire. Yeah, not that I have any desire.
Don't rush out.
Unless you're a huge Rocky Horror fan, in which you have to sit from beginning to end and watch the whole thing.
I wonder if that's on Netflix.
I don't think Rocky Horror is.
Maybe I'll put a hold on my Buck Rogers and Sesame Street viewing. And, a
year or so ago.
Glenn, what do you come away with? You were very, very quiet during Friday Night Who on this, and you mentioned that you kind of got sucked in the story.
I did get sucked in. I tell you, that's what happened is, this is one that I hadn't seen since I was a kid. I remembered it. I pretty much remembered it being set on Pluto. I pretty much remembered the Weasley little guy. I had forgot about the collector. No, the other one, the Gatherer. I had forgot about that character. In fact, I had put those two together in my head, thinking that they were the same person until I saw it, and then I went, well, wait a minute. These are two different guys. It's a fun story. I had forgotten that it took. I mean, and I appreciate it more because of this. But I had forgotten that there's a good chunk of this shot in office building hallways, which I think it didn't really faze me as a kid at all that was the case. And I was a little set off by it this time, thinking, wow, okay, well, at least it's not an abandoned hospital for the interior of the TARDIS, and it's not, that kind of thing. But on the flip side of that, then later, as we were really getting into it, and the whole revelation of, this is a company, and it's, then I was like, well, that's almost appropriate.
Yeah.
That this is
the soulless, faceless corporation.
Because when we've got these, the corridors and the stairwells that are very much the same. And so, yeah, I was actually okay with it at that point. But overall, it's an enjoyable story. And it really comes down to the simplicity of the company needing to, remain in power in order to generate revenue as part of this bigger scale. And it's really a real straightforward story. And I like that. I like the simplicity of it. I think Leela shines in this. I love the fact that she's very heroic. The doctor's wonderful in this. And just he's got that typical doctor, he feels like he's going through the motions, but he really has this calculated plan as he goes the whole time. You're really confident that he knows what he's doing, even at the times that he's captured and almost, gone through this process that the other guys warned him about. It's... The
straitjacket and his helmet.
Yeah, hopping with the straitjacket over to the thing and pulling the one thing out so that it shocks the guy. Yeah, just it's fantastic. And then making the video loop so that when he's walking through the halls.
I remember that part.
I didn't catch that as a kid at all.
You didn't catch that?
So I didn't catch that was so
cool. It was so cool. And I almost wonder if there's an added in-joke in there somewhere. The fact that, what are we doing when we run through corridors? Let's literally, because that's what you do. You set it up. And they run from this end of the corridor, around the corner, down the hall, toward the camera, and out of frame.
Yeah.
And then what do? You run back and reset. And then you do it again to make it look like it's a different hallway. Or you move the camera to the other side, and they run the other direction from you. And I almost wonder if there was an added in-joke in there somewhere when they went, we're gonna do this, where you're going to run past the camera, and we're just going to loop it. And somebody went, maybe not. Maybe I'm reading way too much into that, but... Surely somebody on the set of Doctor Who thought and made that connection and went, that's kind of cool. This was one, as a kid, that I remember when it came on, I remember not necessarily not liking it, but just kind of being, oh, it's that one. It was one kind of like, after you saw it, it was like, eh. And so they'd run through the rotation, and we get, Invisible Enemies on! And then we get Image of the Fendal, which we haven't got to yet on the show, but it's actually, I think it's really scary. I think that's a very frightening one. Maybe we'll save that for Halloween next year.
It is a frightening one.
And then you get the Sunmakers, and there's just, as a kid...
I'd forgot about Image being in there.
There's really nothing remarable about it. Because
as an adult, I found it very enjoyable. Yeah.
As an adult, it's much more enjoyable.
As a tax-paying citizen.
maybe that lends to the reason why I don't remember it that well from being a kid. I remember a little... elements of it.
Yeah.
But because it's geared more towards an adult.
Well, it's such a talky.
It's
there's exactly. not a lot of action going on in this as well.
Despite the fact there's a revolution.
Yeah.
And you know, the other thing that
wonderful cliffhangers, too. I think all of the cliffhangers very, very well done and appropriate.
Oh, well, the doctor getting gassed. We know he's going to make it. But, you know, okay.
You know he's going to make it all the time. But I liked it.
Well, that's why you made the comment that if you're going to do a cliffhanger, put the companion in peril, because we don't have any guarantee of them making it versus the guy whose name is above the title sequence.
Right, exactly. He could die at any time.
Something that did strike me about this, watching it as an adult, and I was really surprised by, you may have to correct me if I'm wrong, there's only one death. Other than the guy whose father died at the beginning off camera that we didn't see. It's when at the end of the episode when they throw the collector.
I keep calling him
the gatherer. No, you're right. The gatherer. They throw the gatherer.
The collector's the other weasel.
The collector's the weasel.
Who turns into the non-human at the end, which I thought was a nice kind of change of pace to it.
That he wasn't just a soulless, faceless,
greedy
human. He was, there's an alien influence here. Okay.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, and he doesn't suck that much.
It's not even his true form. That's what I was
saying. Yes.
Yeah. But, and it makes the voice and the screen and the skin make sense.
Yes.
That he's the eyebrows.
All the while you're thinking, this is a real Panto character here. This is what it really feels like. And then suddenly it's explained.
Yeah. But yeah, there's the gatherer is the only one that I'm familiar with. Everybody else was stunned or knocked out or whatnot. I mean, there's
that got electrocuted on the wall. He didn't die.
I'm going to see that's just
about the people canine attacked.
He sounds stunned. In fact, the one guy in front of the
when they ran over him in the
we don't know about them.
They cut away before they ran him over.
The one guy that the canine stunned outside the detention center. Got up and then went and sounded the alarm. And that's why Leela was fighting to kill somebody. She was like, the last guy I let go, this. So, yeah. But yeah, I'm choosing to believe that the doctor only stunned him. I don't think he would have rewired the machine to actually deliver a lethal dose.
Okay.
I could be wrong. We didn't see. We never found out what happened to that guy. But there's only one confirmed death.
Yeah, no, you're right. Absolutely.
Unless he managed to catch a flagpole on the way down that 1,000-meter building face. Maybe he's alive, too, but... I don't know. Just as an adult, there's so much more in this that was enjoyable with the social commentary and the like we said, it's a talkie. It's a lot of high-minded ideas in this one. As a kid, it was just kind of like, I've seen that, and you go to bed because I'll try it again next week. I'll try it again next week and see what's on. So I was really surprised because this was one that I kind of I'll give to entertain this. They suckered me in with the cover art.
Oh, the cover art makes it look so much more action-packed than it really is.
Because I saw
it. Doesn't give you
bright and catchy.
It doesn't give you any more than what's given in the episode.
Vivid and catchy.
I saw it, and I thought, I don't know if I really... Well, yeah, I got to buy all of them eventually. And then I got a deal on it. It's like, well, okay, I'll get this now. And then going back and watching it, I'm so glad I have this one, because it's just a well-done story.
It is well-crafted, I have nothing else to say about it.
Yeah, it's high marks for Tom Baker's run.
All right. Well, what's next on the schedule, Sean?
Next on the schedule, The Snowman. No, I'm kidding.
That's still a couple weeks away.
Come on. Pulling the schedule up. Sorry, I didn't have this.
That's all right.
For Friday Night Who.
We kind of ended quickly on
For Friday Night Who this week, we're doing the first three episodes of... The Time Monster.
The Time Monster. Thank you. I couldn't remember. and that does mark...
So Keith couldn't remember either. That's why he looked at you for a second.
We go through this every Friday night. As we're signing off, do the thing, and then he looks at me and goes, what's next week? This one. Okay. Which does mark...
I don't know.
there is a slight change in the program at this point.
As opposed to what was posted online.
Which we will get updated. I will get updated. Probably after finals, but I will get updated. initially, we were doing the Time Monster, and then we were doing Big Bang, Pandora Opens, just for the Friday Night Who schedule, but we made the official edict that anything that's six parts, anything that's over five parts will be broken into two weeks. So we're going to do the Time Monster, parts 1 through 3. It's a John Pertwee story with the Master. Next week for Friday Night Who, Glenn will be gone, so he will not be joining us for that Friday Night Who, and then Keith and I will be doing the show the following next week, which we're doing our book reviews. Touched by what are you doing, Keith?
Touched by an Angel by Jonathan Morris.
He didn't do it right. Say it again. I didn't set it up right. What are you doing, Keith?
Touched by an Angel.
That was still even a little too radio voicey.
Too radio voicey.
Touched by an angel.
I mean, I never watched
yeah,
it.
You gotta do it like CBS.
I never watched it, so
touched
I don't know.
Touched by an angel.
Touched by an angel.
Well, not effeminately.
That's how
he can't
doing
do it.
It
rehearsed. He nah, just has to do it naturally. He missed it, Mark. Holman.
You know, Amy was touched by an angel.
So was Rory.
Aww. I'm sad again.
Is this the Weeping Angels in this? What is?
The title didn't give that away.
Yeah, we've been talking about... It's funny, we've been talking about this book for probably the best part of a month now, and I just now realized
even longer when I got it like 6 months ago.
Huh.
I'll be reading...
Here, read the description.
No, that's all right.
I'll be reading The Paradigm of the Daleks. Are the Daleks in that? And
you
I'm,
are?
No. I'm, oh. I'm doing Apollo 23, which I'm guessing has something to do with the space program. I haven't started it yet. So...
Which Apollo?
23.
I thought he just said 13 that time.
I probably did. So I'll be doing that by Justin Richards. So join us for that. And then the following week, 12/21, Friday Night Who, we're finishing The Time Monster.
And it's the end of the world.
And it's the end of the world. So hopefully the Master is not successful, because I'll be really upset if I don't find out how that ends. And more importantly, if the world ends, I won't get to see the snowman.
No, we'll finish Time Monster, because that's 12/20, right? Is Friday Night Who?
No, it's the 21st is 21st. Friday, so we technically don't start until the 22nd. No. So we may not get to find out. If we're still around.
You guys realize it ends at 11
a.m.
A.m., but not our time. That's
Central
Universal,
America, right, or something.
UTC, whatever that is. Universal
that was,
time.
That was 5 like a.m. in the morning.
Which is like 5 a.m. for us, or 4,
so
6
that's Thursday morning.
Yeah.
Or early
Friday morning.
Yeah, early Friday morning.
Okay.
Is when the world
well, as long
awake.
As I'm not awake
That's
for it,
awake.
I don't care.
It's kind of why I said, oh, good, I'll be asleep.
Guess where I'll be that night.
The happiest place on earth.
On the happy place on earth. And I'll be at Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party. That's an exclusive thing that we paid for that there's only a... Well, probably still 200 or 300 people, but there's less
you
people.
You and 500 of your closest friends
exactly.
will be enjoying this exclusive.
Yeah, we will be partying with Mickey Mouse, Minnie Mouse, Donald Duck, your favorite Goofy, and
that was horrible.
Good. No, it was good. It was good.
Flail.
Probably maybe Daisy and
Gorsh.
Flail is a reference from Kingdom Hearts. Whenever you fight with Goofy, he says, flail! I don't know why, but that's his catchphrase from Kingdom Hearts.
That's how he would have fought.
He would have flailed.
Sorry, I just had to bring that up, because I'm pretty happy that I'm going to be celebrating with Mickey.
So, we'll finish the Time Monster, If the World Doesn't End, at 6 in the morning. And then Glenn will return, and now remember, you have homework to do while you're on vacation, when you're on the airplane. You got to listen to Dust Reading.
I told you I've already listened to Dust
Reading. I know.
Listened to Dust Reading in the last couple of weeks just to be ready to go.
And you'll also have to watch The Time Monster.
Time Monster, yes.
Okay.
Right.
Because we're doing...
I'm working on that one.
An Adversary Archive on The Master, Part 2, Electric Boogaloo. And it's The Time Monster and Big Finish. And then Friday Night Who the 28th, because unfortunately Christmas falls in between. We were going to do The Christmas Invasion with David Tennant for our Friday Night Who that night, and then we'll do The Snowman. And, of course, now, again, spoiler warning, once it airs, because it will air on BBC and BBC America, the Christmas special will air on Christmas, we will
You'll
be
have
talking about it.
4 to 5 days to watch the episode before our
maybe,
episode
maybe,
comes
well,
out.
Well, maybe not even that, depending on when we record, if we wind up recording Christmas night.
But if we end up recording Christmas
that's a
night,
that's a different week though.
That's
we,
a different
we
episode.
The snowman will record the week after that.
Yeah,
Christmas night, or if we end up recording
Christmas night,
that's going to be our
that's
master.
Time record. Monster. Yeah. Yeah,
and Dust Breeding.
Yes.
Oh,
book review.
I gotcha. Okay,
and
I can see
I
why you're
back,
confused
we realize
now.
That there's some issues
because I don't have dates on the episodes. I have dates on the Friday night news. Okay, I gotcha.
Record. That Sunday, what would have been that Sunday, but now may end up being Wednesday after Christmas, will be the Master Archive. And then the week after that, after Christmas.
And then 5 days later.
Like 2 days before New Year's
Eve. 2 days before New Year's is when we'll actually be reviewing Snowman.
Yeah. The day before New Year's Eve.
We were really early with our Christmas review last year. We'll be late this year. We're not late,
okay.
But, you know, we're all right. So you'll have heard everybody else talk about it, and you'll come to us for the real scoop. So
I believe everybody... Everybody will release, will record that Sunday. Most of those guys record either Friday or Sunday, and that'll be the week after Christmas, too. We'll be releasing our episode about the same time everybody else is reviewing Christmas.
What are we worried about? I wasn't
worried about it. And then, I just couldn't figure out why we weren't doing that for Friday Night Who, since we were all going to have access to the
I worried about the show. Listeners not having actual copies of it. I didn't want to promote any kind of illegal piracy from somebody who may not have gotten it. Not everybody has access to BBC America. Not everybody has access to Hulu or
iTunes
or, you know. Not everybody went out and paid for the
You're doing Christmas stuff anyways.
Yeah. So. You're not going to be here that Friday.
No, that's not what you said on Friday.
Actually, you're right. I did, but those plans changed. That's why I'm saying. Oh. No, those plans changed. Well, no, those plans changed between when I said that, because we were going to do Christmas stuff with my family the week after, since we weren't going to be able to do it on Christmas or the week in before. Now we're going to cram everybody into that Sunday when we get back, which is going to be crazy, which is hence the reason I said I won't be here until super late on Sunday. You have to go in early, so there's probably no way we're recording Saturday night or Sunday night.
I follow.
And now we can't do it Monday because he has to work. Well, we both have to. Well, I do. No, you don't work.
We can
but
do
I
Monday
work.
Night.
But I work until 11, and then I have to get up but early
and I'm
on
be
Christmas
by that point
to go to Wichita, and then I can do it Christmas night. We talked about coming here, and we're rehashing all of the same conversation we had
as
during
earlier.
The show earlier.
It's almost like we're stuck in a time loop, like somebody's watching us
but
walk on a
still
corridor.
We come here Christmas night, but it doesn't matter if we watch the snowman.
But we are going to watch the snowman. That was his point, was nobody will have seen it
yet. But we're not reviewing
it
at that point.
So we'll just watch it. Well, no, you're right.
But that's what was throwing me. So we'll watch the snowman, but then
we won't review it.
Record the master.
Correct.
Okay.
That's the idea.
See?
I was confused. Yeah, I was confused. Okay.
You got it now.
I got it now. And then possibly some fun things next year. Now, obviously, I'll throw this out there, too. Any schedule that you see posted online after Christmas, take it with a grain of salt, because we're back in that holding pattern where we don't know when Doctor Who's coming back. Mm-hmm. Maybe the Christmas special will say, in 3 weeks, Doctor Who returns, and we'll all go, and I'll have to rework this. But
yeah.
I'd rather have that than 3 months.
Oh,
so,
absolutely.
So I'm personally
be surprised if we got a date at Christmas.
I would be surprised, too. I think it'll say spring. I'm betting on March.
I'm betting on March as well. I would agree.
But so there's that. So,
all right. Well, if that's it, if we've discussed our schedule enough,
if we've aired our dirty laundry enough,
that's going to do it for this week.
Airing our unmentionables since 2010.
Until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Good night, everybody.
Be seeing you.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.